Hey, it's Boss Bro, episode 192. Let's get going.
Yeah, let's get going. Tell me about that Vita you bought.
Oh my God, okay. So
I want to hear about it.
Have you been just holding off asking me this until I hit the record button?
No, but I am. I looked at the document and I got really excited about you, about another human having a Vita, because you've probably like increased the percentage of Vita ownership by a significant amount,
right?
Just with your purchase.
You could see that percentage tick up one after I bought that at Best Buy.
Yeah, the number of people I can share my Vita experience with has just increased by infinity percent.
Well, Jeff, let me tell you about the Vita. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It is so goddamn underrated.
It really is. The ergonomics of it are great. I freaking love that thing.
Yeah. I mean, initially pulling it out of the box, like playing with it, starting it up, doing all that stuff, like I was like, holy crap, this is really fun UI. Like everything is fun about it. It was totally surprising. Like where the 3DS kind of apes like the iOS pretty directly with like tiles and you know, they kind of have that weird like suspend function and home button and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
the Vita definitely takes it puts their own spin on it.
Yeah,
I love the peel. I love the peel.
I find the peel a little superfluous, but I do like it.
No, it's so good.
I was going to say, I remember when I first saw the UI in the unveiling videos, I was so suspicious. I was like, this looks dumb. I hate bubbles. They're stupid. Why don't they put Android on that thing? And then when I got it, I had the same experience that you had. It for whatever reason, I was extremely skeptical about touch navigation, but it just works so well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you don't even need to do the touch. If you're completely opposed to it, you can, you know, use the buttons to move around the home screen too. But I don't know. Like if their central like axiom for Vita touch control design was like, it's like a sticky note, I'm like, oh my God, I love this.
Did you realize you can customize your front screen yet?
No,
when you first unlock the console?
No.
I have a Katamari one with a zipper. So when I undo it, it looks like a zipper is getting undone.
Oh my God.
It's really cool.
Can you get a Lucky Brand Jean one that's buttons that takes forever to get open and then you pee yourself?
I hope so. That's going to be added in a firmware.
Okay.
Actually,
good.
Another nice thing about the Vita is they've been pretty good with their firmware updates in terms of adding additional functionality. Like, they cleaned up the PlayStation emulator. I don't know if you played around with that yet.
I haven't touched the PlayStation emulator yet, no.
Oh, okay.
Only PSP.
Yeah, okay. Well, they cleaned that up. Like, they used to have it that you had to use rear touch to emulate buttons, but now you can use front touch if you want or the other analog stick. They added the controlling with buttons thing, so that even though like it's not selling very well, they've been pretty active in adding new features, which I like. But anyway, sorry, I'll let you continue.
My last thing for it. I guess I'll stick on the positive train here. Starting up, like, totally adored the UI. I was surprised to find how comfortable it became for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still feel like I'm dealing with a device that may be a little bit too big, or I guess it's like, I don't know. Like, the buttons are a little too close together, but it definitely works. Like, you're never banging into shit, and everything is kind of, you know, it's like it's a controller. You know, when you're playing on a controller, any controller, and you're pushing the thumbsticks around and you feel those buttons, you're like, okay, I need to adjust my hand now. Like, that's what humans do.
Yeah. How do you like that D-pad?
I haven't had a ton of opportunity to use it. I mean, I haven't played a lot of RPGs on it, and I haven't played any fighting games on it that use the D-pad. Fighting games out there that don't use the D-pad. It's okay. I was a little shocked when I first saw it that it wasn't like the DualShock controller of like it's recessed and it just has the button sticking out. Like it is like there's just that little wobble tab, but the clicks definitely have a good feel to it.
Oh, see, I love the D-pad. I think the D-pad is one of the best D-pads I've ever used, and I actually think it might surpass Nintendo D-pads.
Wow.
I freaking love this D-pad. I think it's great. I'm playing Spelunky on the Vita right now, and I just, it's going from using an Xbox controller on Steam, which has like the worst D-pad in the history of time,
yeah,
to using this thing. It is glorious. I love it.
I bet.
And I experienced the same sensation about the buttons being small. You had a PSP before, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Going from the PSP, it's definitely a bit of a shock at first, but you get really used to it, and they're so satisfyingly clicky. Do you have the squeaky L&R buttons?
I don't. Thank God. Okay. I had them,
and I like loosened my L button with an eyeglass screwdriver. It was the most tense experience of my life.
I have that with my Vita or my PSP. There's a little noisy click to one of the buttons, and the other one doesn't have it. So I'm just like, Peace Walker, you're so challenging.
Because I'm a what's the word, whore for Sony. I sold all my PSP games and then rebought them at a slight loss on my Vita. So I have lots of PSP games on there.
Okay. So. Well, at least you can admit it.
I mean, I do buy iterations of Nintendo handhelds.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty deep down that rabbit hole already.
I'll tell you about some of the things. I'll save a few things that I do like to do the sandwich thing. But so okay. The things that I don't love about it off the bat are, I don't know if it's if you have this problem or maybe it's on my side, but when I bought it, I then logged on to PSN and was downloading all my games that I have, you know, claimed through PlayStation Plus or, mm-hmm. you know, Crossbuy or whatever. And it took about 2 days to download everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, how much did you have?
Not a ton. I mean, like all the free games on PSN I put on there. So, you know, maybe four or five games and a couple that I owned.
Wow. I'm surprised.
It's very slow to download, and then it also will time out, and it just had a really hard time connecting with my wireless.
Huh. No, I actually haven't had that problem, and I was anticipating it just because Sony is, you know, notoriously bad at network infrastructure, but I've had pretty reasonable downloads. I mean, on par with any other console I've had. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty peppy. I mean, you know, not up to like Steam rates, but not bad.
I was
not anywhere near PS3 levels.
See, I was kind of chalking it up to like, okay, this must just be like a PSN issue or like a my router having a bad time communicating with the PS Vita, or maybe something in my settings was like shutting it off. It's hard to say. So I can't really fault the system for that, but I know mm-hmm. that was a pain in the ass experience because I was just like, I just want you to be good to go.
Yeah, that's weird. One thing I have noticed about, while we're on the subject of network connectivity, one thing that really annoys me is that it's super fiddly about maintaining your PSN connection when you play games.
Mm-hmm.
And when you like put the system to sleep and wake it up after like 3 minutes, it's like, you've lost your connection to PSN.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to update your scores anymore. And it's not like immediately apparent how you can reestablish that connection. And it's just this annoying little nag.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only network issue I'm like, that's at the fore of my mind.
Yeah.
I haven't had what you're describing. So,
my other little stupid point was when I was trying to start it up and get it going, like I was reading the instructions and I was like, okay, like I'll open this slot and pull this thing out. And I pulled out and it's the SIM card and it just like falls on the floor. And I'm like, well, thank you, IKEA, for doing this bullshit. Like, you could have maybe given me a little bit clearer of direction here.
I forgot you had the 3G model.
Yeah, yeah. And every time I start it up from a dead power off, it's like MM2 connection failure, you know, C settings.
Whoa.
Like, that, I mean, I assume that's just because the SIM card isn't activated.
MM2 is your memory card.
Well, okay.
I would look into that.
I mean, but there's no like native. How much memory is built in natively to it?
I think it has like maybe 512 megs of flash memory for holding the OS.
Yeah, so that can't be that. My card has to be working because I have, you know, like four full size ass full games on there. Like I've, okay. I've got Gravity Rush, I've got Golden Abyss or Golden Chart, whatever the fuck Nathan Drake thing, Wipeout and VLR. So each one of those games need to be at least a gig.
Yeah, yeah, varying sizes. That shouldn't even come close to filling up your memory card.
Yeah.
Probably about half, maybe, if even.
I haven't even checked.
Yeah,
let's see here. The other things that I like to go, that's really all the like the big complaints I have about it. The other like complaint that I have isn't really a complaint, where it's like, you, I pulled that open, I was like, oh, the screen is so gorgeous. So
the saturation of the colors, I love how oversaturated it is. Even though it's not like most accurate color reproduction, I just love that.
Right.
Super vibrant look.
Absolutely. Every inch of that device is just gorgeous too.
Yeah.
So I put my sweaty, sloppy, you know, gross man fingers on there, and it's just
it's
like
such a grease magnet.
Yeah. So I did that. I bought the thing. I went to the place where I go to unwrap my new handheld devices.
You have like a place?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bar at the mall.
Oh, nice. That's really cool, actually.
They have wireless, and that's where I go and sit and unwrap my new crap.
Oh, is that in case it has like a dead pixel or something? You can just return it immediately?
No, it's just like I get it and I'm like at the mall area and I'm like, I'm going to go have a drink and open this and play with it. And they have wireless and I'm going to show it off to these people that like games. And Jen was there with me. And I'm, you know, I'm like, you know, having a great time with it and like looking at all this crap. And then I was like, I should have bought the 32. Why didn't I buy the 32 meg stick? Like, there's
that
no
was
way.
When you texted me.
Yeah. I was like, it's catching up. So I left there and I bought the 32 stick. And then I also put the protection plan on it because I was I was like, this screen, $20 and I can get a new one in a year.
That's true.
So I was like, you know, if I drop it, and it was mostly because I was like, this screen is so freaking pretty. If I put the slightest little dent in it, I'm going to be so sad. So I want... Best Buy has changed their policy now where it's not like you need to prove there's a defect. Like they have gone like the Apple Care protection of like, if you sneeze on it too hard, you can bring it in and we'll replace it for you.
That's awesome.
So if Best Buy is still around in a year,
that's the major if.
Yeah. So the other reason was like, I was like, hey, you know, I'll get into this in a second, but it's like, hey, you know, if a new model releases in the next 6 months, then potentially I can go and swap this out for the new one.
Gotcha. So is part of the protection plan that you can trade up?
Yes.
New model for a cheaper price?
It is. Their protection plan is, we will replace your device with an equal device that we have in stock.
Oh, nice.
Or if we don't have anything in stock, we will order you something.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Best Buy has always been pretty good about their protection plans. Honestly.
Yeah, they have good return policies too, especially compared to GameStop, which is just like the moment it touches your hands, it's contaminated.
Yep, not ours anymore. Fuck you.
I ordered a quote unquote used copy of Metroid Prime Trilogy.
Oh, you did.
At the reduced price. I waited for them to drop it once. I think it was reduced to like 70 from 75 or something.
Oh,
and then
you got a steal there.
Shut up. I had a trade credit card for like $16. So I was like, oh, it's like it's $54. I'll buy that.
Yeah, I mean, you're like, that's like new with tax.
Yeah. And it came and it was clearly a new copy. It was a new copy. And literally someone had just put a pre-owned sticker on the back, but it wasn't like the usual pre-owned sticker. It wasn't like the, you know, Power to the Players, GameStop Power Rewards pre-owned sticker. It was just like a generic white pre-owned sticker that someone had like partially affixed to the back. And the thing was just completely spotless, instruction manual included.
Nice.
Disc was immaculate. It was clearly a new copy.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, at least if you're paying that amount of money for that, at least you have like a good pristine copy.
Yeah. It just came today.
Nice. Congratulations.
Yeah,
I'm envious.
I mean, you know, I could send it to you after I'm done if you want.
Oh, I won't play it. But I have a Wii still, but I won't.
You won't do it.
The Wii is currently a Netflix machine. Yeah, and an occasional Punch Out machine.
Punch Out is awesome.
I know, I love Punch Out.
Such a great game.
Yeah.
Remember when we met the guy who worked on Punch Out?
I do remember that. That was such a cool night.
Yeah, it was. That's a thing that other podcast listeners won't understand at all.
Yep. Dude who was a QA dude for
Next Level Games.
Next Level Games. He was the one who pitched the idea for Donkey Kong being the final boss.
Yes. And they were talking about a big new property. I'm wondering if that was Luigi's Mansion.
So I had heard that something along the lines of it being them who did that, yes? But yes. Their name was never mentioned immediately in the credits, and that is supposed to be like some weird Eastern giant sign of like congratulations from Nintendo, where when Nintendo puts their name before the developer's name, it's like Nintendo saying this is our product and not somebody else's, which is it's essentially like, you know, the secret Yakuza handshake of approval.
Yeah, I do know that they were featured. I read an Ibarra Asks with them, and Nintendo was really happy with their product and said like they're going to trust them with other IP in the future, and they did so well on it that they're like on the level of an Eastern developer. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Good Canadian folk.
They were cool. That guy was a nice guy.
Very nice guy. Watching E3 on his netbook. Drinking
Chew High. E3 was happening.
Yep.
They announced a new Super Mario Brothers, or I think the Wii version. I remember that much. Anyway, though. So your Vita. So any other thoughts about your Vita?
Oh yeah, the other really positive thing. Now I know why everybody says the PS3 thumbsticks suck. Yeah. Because the Vita thumbsticks are so nice.
They're so small, though. Sometimes I have a little trouble with them.
I do, too. But when I've been playing through Saints Row 4, I've been noticing the things that I do, like, subconsciously with my thumbs while I'm playing on the PS4. Playing Saints Row 4 definitely has some correlation to playing Gravity Rush. With the way your character moves around the world and dynamically moving them on the fly while they're zooming through the air, it has made me realize that I have been kind of like a battered wife compensating for a lot of issues subconsciously on my PS3 controller. And the Vita is like, it's okay, baby. I'll take you as you are. I mean, now I know it's not perfect. Like, I would like them to be a little bit bigger, maybe have a little more give, maybe be away from the buttons a little bit more. Yeah. But comparatively, it has shown that, like, yes, that those need a redesign.
Yeah, those PS3 triggers, or not triggers, analog sticks just feel so cheap. Yep. It's unfortunate. And they're super sloppy, and they just way too much, like, room for travel. I don't like them.
Oh, for me, it's not that. It's kind of losing the grip on them. So what I've been doing is, I like, you know, play Saints Row 4 and I jump into the air and I hold the stick forward to move in that direction, and I'm moving the camera too. And what I have to do is, all subconsciously but now consciously, I will take one thumb off the other trigger, hold that trigger as I adjust my other thumb back into place for a better hold on it, because it's slipping too far forward off the top of it.
I'm surprised you didn't become consciously aware of this issue when you were playing The Last of Us, because that required a lot of analog precision. And I remember just like fearing the entire time that I would just lose control of the analog stick.
I think it's mostly open world games that I have that issue with, because you're holding in a direction for a prolonged amount of time. It's the finite, like small little short movements I have no problem with. I prefer it over the Xbox. But it's like the big hold this thing in this direction for a long time, which is where I need to like readjust, basically.
Yeah, mainly for me, like I don't really have the kind of problem you're talking about with holding direction for a long time. I just wish the sticks had a little bit more resistance, more shape, and just didn't. Do you know how like when you push them down, you can pull them back up? Have you ever done this?
Well, what?
You could like push them into the controller and then pull them out. I do it.
Which device?
On the PS3.
Like you click them in?
When you click them in, sometimes it like the controller has like another, like the actual entire mechanism can move inside of the socket.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually like pull it in and out. It's not good.
Huh. Never noticed that. I have taken apart several PlayStation 3 controllers.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, man. That is like looking in the mouth of madness. Like, I had the oh shit moment when I was like trying to, I think the bat, I don't know what happened, but like my old controller that wasn't a DualShock, like I took it apart. I was like, oh, I'm going to see what it's like in there. And I pull it apart, and it's like a bazillion pieces explode out of it. It's like,
yeah, I saw a video of a 360 teardown, and all the buttons just fall off.
360 is honestly not that bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just weird because like you kind of have to manhandle it to put it back together. But the PS3 controller, like the button, there's these little plastic pieces that like separate the L and R one and two buttons from each other.
Okay,
and then they just like they hover, like I think there's like an anti-gravity field in there that keeps them in place, because it's like they're like the keystone, like without the support of the rest of the device, it completely falls apart, yet it's the only thing holding it together.
Wow.
Like it's so weird. You take it apart and it's like these things just go flying everywhere, and it's like, well, I'm fucked, because I did not see how that was holding together in the first place.
I wonder if, like, a piece of Ken Kutaragi's soul is in each PS3 controller.
Yeah.
And when you open it, that piece escapes.
No, each one of those is a Horcrux. Every PS3 controller is a Horcrux for Ken Kutaragi. He will never die.
He has 599 U.S. Horcruxes.
Oh, whatever. His install base is way bigger. Like 1 million, 1 million troops bigger.
That's what's his name? Oh gosh, what's that guy's name? He has a short name. He's crazy.
Talk Fuji.
Yeah, Talk Fuji. I love him. He's great.
He is. He's a very energetic man.
Produces some terrible games.
Sure does.
He was like in charge of the Frogger 3DS remake.
Oh, Jesus. Well. Whatever, I guess. The Vita is great.
I'm so glad you like it.
And that's what I was going to say, is like, it is totally the most underappreciated device ever. Like, it is so fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
I can put it in my pocket.
You
even,
can.
Even though you look at that and you're like, this should never go in a pocket. And I put it in there, I was like, nope, totally fine.
It's surprisingly rugged for such a high-end, sort of delicate-looking piece of kit. It really holds up nicely. So I don't know. I mean, I take immaculate care of my consoles, but it is. I like how weighty it is. Honestly, mm-hmm. I could see that. Like, I guess some people might get fatigue after holding it, but it's very solid in its construction.
Certainly, so, yeah. It doesn't feel flimsy like the PSP, like where it just feels kind of like hollow.
Yeah, the PSP feels like if you pushed it too hard, you could just like.
Yeah.
Punch through the system's guts.
Right.
The PSP is like, or the PS Vita is like, oh man.
Yeah, it's a
like,
brick. Yeah, it's, yeah, exactly. It's like holding a Game Boy sideways.
So gorgeous, though. Yeah. Have you been playing any games on it?
I have been playing a lot of games on it. I need to look at my list. Yeah, I started it up and I was like, well, I'll just start going all this shit I have. So Yeah, I think the first thing I played on it was Dive Kick.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I showed it to my, what do you call that, nephew-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
I was like sitting with him, I was like, dude, check this out. It's a fighting game that you only... Okay, never mind, just check this out. but it looks really good. It plays fine. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, it's not the best showcase of the Vita's capabilities by a long shot.
I was going to say that the using the L and R buttons, they're too squishy to be competitive, because you can't do like fast meter building dive kicks. But it's definitely fun to just like fuck around on and be like, hey, look, isn't this dumb? Yeah, yep, sure it is.
Well, you can reassign. I told you, I think, already that on the Vita, I reassigned dive and kick to left and circle.
Makes sense.
But yeah, even so, like the loading time is a little too long, and I couldn't get an online matchup. I just lost patience.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not the best showcase, but
the next game I played was Mutant Blobs Attack.
Oh, nice! Yeah. I'm sad I missed that on PlayStation Plus. Tell me about it.
I think the best thing it has going for it is it's like it's got a really awesome art style. Kind of fun, like 50s Ren and Stimpy, if that's a way, if that's a thing. Like,
that's cool. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yep. It's like retro movie poster meets 90s cartoon.
Okay.
So kind of like Powerpuff Girls.
Interesting.
So it's definitely fun. It's a puzzle platformer.
Okay.
With an art style.
Yeah, I played it at PAX for like 2 seconds. So
yeah,
I'm
it's cool.
Aware
like,
of it.
Really, yeah. Really simple puzzle solving. Kind of like, you know, there is some Twitch gameplay. There is some just like generic. Hey, you collect shit, you get bigger, and that's about it so far.
Hey, it's Loco Roco.
Yes, it is very much Loco Roco.
Yeah. It's by the Guacamelee guys, right?
Yes. Yeah, Drinkbox. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, it is great. I played a bit of Guacamelee as well.
Nice.
Just
Vita is like the platform for Guacamelee, I think.
Okay. Okay.
Personally.
I'm sure.
Have you played it to completion on the PS3?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forget. I assume you enjoyed it if you played it on the Vita as well.
Yes, I did enjoy it. However, when I got to the, was the leopard dude?
Okay. Yep.
That dude, my friend and I were playing it together, and we were doing co-op, and the only way we were able to beat it was by like cheesing the co-op, and then I just like gave up because I think I was too drunk to keep going. I was like, "You just beat it, Matt," and he did, and it was ugly, and it was like, "Well, okay, there we go." And then that last fight was pretty brutal too, but
yeah,
you know, definitely not a perfect game, but super fun.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was necessarily deserving of the heaps of praise it got. I think it didn't really have the same amount of, I guess depth is what I would say, as like Super Metroid. But it was like a nice, fun little mini Metroidvania type game.
If you want to put it on like a Metroidvania hierarchy, you'd be like, okay, so it's Super Metroid, Symphony of the Night, like however you rank those two, and then Shadow Complex, and then Guacamelee.
Yeah, like a couple rungs down.
Yeah.
Like behind some games that haven't yet been created, but will get a higher spot.
Sure, or like, you know, a lot of the Castlevania games on the DS.
Exactly, yes. Your Aria of Sorrow, your Harmony of Dissonance,
yeah,
Order of Ecclesia, all those, right. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. That's the perfect thing to slot in right above it.
Yep, yeah. I mean, mainly, those games are great. I don't want to shit on them. I really like those games, but this one is just so much more fun and silly and lighthearted. So it has a lot more personality in that way.
Yeah, I agree completely. It lacks the mechanical depth. It doesn't quite the actual like minute. Well, the Metroidvania part of it isn't as well developed, but the like actual like clearing out rooms and fighting just feels kind of like dumb fun.
Yeah, and the combat is so snappy, and it works so well in a way that like Castlevania games don't do.
Oh yeah, Castlevania combat is freaking weird.
Yep. Yeah. I also played. Let's see here. I don't want to get too heavy. Oh, okay. I played Virtue's Last Reward for about an hour, 2 hours last night.
Mm-hmm. I haven't played it yet. What didn't you like about it, or what was weird about it?
Well, Japan. Okay, so you need to like at the beginning of the game, it tells you it's like this is an active game puzzle novel where it's like there will be two segments where you're puzzle solving and then doing novel parts. They're like, are you okay with that?
Continue. It's like a ludonarrative dissonance warning.
Yeah, totally. It's like none of this will really make sense, but go for it. It's super weird. I played through the first, like, I don't know what you want to call it, like the intro mission that's like, hey, this is how you play games. And technically, it does not do well on the Vita because you need a stylus for the precision.
Okay. Gotcha.
To click on certain things. Like, I was just poking my dumb, you know, fat American fingers at like these little tiny pixel perfect key slots, and I was like, that's an elevator door, and I'm like, no fucking way, really, for the fifth time. It is very tedious, and it's like bad old adventure game design where it's like you combine this with this and you combine with this with this. So yeah, it's like you combine wheel with car, and then you combine wheel with bicycle, or it's like, yeah, car wheel with car, bicycle wheel with bicycle, four wheeler wheel with four wheeler. And then it's like, now what do you think the fourth one is? You, what's left in your inventory? You have a moped and a moped wheel. And you're like, what do you think that's going to go with? And all this shit is in your inventory at the same time. And but you have to actively
combine everything.
Combine them. And it's just, it's like, okay, I've figured you out, puzzle. You're not even a puzzle. You're just fucking with me right now.
Like, that's a bummer.
Yeah. And then it's like, you go and you drive your car, you drive your moped, you drive your crap. And it's like, okay, I get it. Like, you apply those things to the things that those things require. Totally. Ugh. Like, yes.
Do the puzzles, like, follow the story? Like, are the puzzles, like, they serve the plot? Like, aren't the puzzles, like, escaping from rooms?
Yes. Yeah. And the one that I have done, it is, like, you're stuck in this room. You need to escape this room. But it is very much like adventure game design, where nothing you've ever learned in reality has any bearing on what you're doing there. Where it's like, oh, well, it's an elevator that has a row of buttons, but then it also has another row of buttons on both sides of the wall opposed to those primary elevator buttons. And then you can unscrew all these things, and there's a fire extinguisher, and there's a quantum computer. You're like,
see, I love that kind of stuff. I like the bizarre solutions to puzzles.
I wouldn't even say it's bizarre. Like, it's not like, you know, a pulley and a rubber chicken sort of bizarre. It's just like, these things have nothing to do with each other. And the only thing you could take away from this is, like, serving gameplay is, like, something is amiss here, and things, like, it's like Lost. Like, you know, god damn it. It, you know, you go, you're on this tropical island, and then there's this, like, super high-tech computer lab, and you're like, this does not seem right. Something is up.
I'll have to give it a shot. It still sounds good to me. I was a little worried that the puzzles would not, like, serve the gameplay. Like, I really, have you played any Layton?
Yeah.
I really hated Layton, like, from the get-go, because the puzzles just had absolutely nothing to do with the game.
But what do you mean? This man needs these matchsticks in the shape of a dog.
That's
the only way you can solve this mystery, is if you can tell what's the shortest route, if this guy was traveling at this speed and this guy was traveling at this speed.
Why don't they just separate the plot from the shitty puzzles that I did, like, on my flashcards back in third grade?
Jeff, like, you cannot solve the murder mystery unless you pour the milk to equal amounts in these different sized glasses. His car is parked behind other cars. How do you get it out?
Can you explain to me why do people like these games? I don't understand it.
I don't know. Actually, I never beat the first Layton, but my wife beat it.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
We should get her in on this. Yeah. Speaking of getting people in, we've Jamie's on. Mm. Should we add him to our call?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to add him right now.
Okay, great. While you're adding him, let's see here. What else did I play? Oh yeah, so VLR. I'll talk a little bit about VLR.
What?
Whoa!
What? I'm back!
Hey, what's up?
I've gained 30 pounds.
Change
and,
your gender.
I'm colorblind.
You're Chelsea Manning.
What?
You sound like my Saints Row character.
Yes.
Did you not hear that Bradley Manning is Chelsea Manning now, Jamie?
That's
been spread over your head.
No, he's a lady.
Yeah.
There's a picture of him. He's a lady now.
Yeah. That's what you did. You're a lady now.
Yeah. Because all spies
Topical.
Are transsexuals. Yeah.
This has firmly rooted us in late 2013.
That's right. Yeah.
When the aliens listen to this podcast.
Go check out anybody who's ever played Bond. They're all transsexual now. Daniel Craig is a sexy, sexy lady.
He's hairless. He's completely hairless.
Wow.
It's a medical condition, Jamie. He's that guy in the movie about prepubescent boys who just wishes he could grow peach fuzz.
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. I thought you were gonna say Patrick Swayze, and I was like, that's low, man. But it's Patrick Stewart.
Oh man, I'm back.
That's great. I'm glad you're here.
Back. Yeah. I'm glad I'm here. Good to hear you guys' voices.
Jamie, we were talking about the Vita because Griffin bought one.
Oh, nice. Did you get one of those deals? The $200 plus some games and a card?
Yeah, I got a Vita for $200, and the two things that it came with it, I am not using.
What games came with it?
A Walking Dead and a 4 gig memory card.
What? You don't want to play Walking Dead?
I've already played it.
Oh, okay. Would you recommend that game?
Maybe. Yes, maybe.
Maybe.
You would love it, Jamie. I would definitely get it.
Have you played it, Jeff?
Yeah, I played haven't you? I can't believe you haven't played Walking Dead.
It was like the most obvious choice for Game of the Year last year.
Here's the problem. So I've heard that there's a Walking Dead game that's really good. But then there are Walking Dead games that are awful. And I don't know which one is which. So that's the problem.
Don't get the one that has like a word after it.
Here's my solution, Jamie. Get a Vita.
And then the only one that's good is on there?
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm going to tell you what's the bad Walking Dead game. Okay.
I see it now. So Walking Dead has a Metascore of 82. Walking Dead 400 Days, which has the same font as The Walking Dead with an 82, has a 77. And then there's The Walking Dead Survival Instinct. And the font looks like Dante's Peak, and it has this 38.
That's the one where apparently there's a mouse cursor on the screen on the Xbox version.
It's $50. The good one's $25. this confused me, and so that kind of scared me. But I'll check it out.
Should just be like every other American and pull the trigger on whatever Walking Dead comes into your hand. Don't think about it.
Yeah, just buy the one that you see first.
So Shannon and I tried to watch the first episode of Walking Dead. I loved it, by the way. Although very, very hard to watch. But so there's a horse and it dies. And in the episode. And so that happened. And then Shannon started sobbing hysterically. And she screamed to nobody in particular, "That horse trusted you!" we never watched the episode.
I had more trouble with the little girl that also died in the first episode.
Who cares about people? They die all the time.
I was watching it on the plane, like flying cross country or something. And I couldn't finish. Because there's a little girl and she's going to die.
I can't finish on planes either.
Usually I can finish when little girls are in peril. Not this time.
Did we lose Griffin, or is he just like really pondering what we're saying?
just here, guys.
He's just flabbergasted at how much damage we've done to the reputation he's been trying to build up.
Oh, jeez. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Reddit's going to hate this one.
It's gonna get one down vote, and then that'll be
what about my dig rating?
Hey, remember dig? Remember how I loved to dig for realsies?
You were a dig nation.
I was a dig nation groupie.
You were in the dig nation.
I was in
the sovereign nation of dig.
The Jeff, dig nation was
Griffin.
I want to talk about Gravity Rush.
Yes. No. Yes. Maybe. What did you like it?
Yes.
Yes. So happy.
It's so fucked up, though.
Why?
Because it's so weird.
Why?
It's awesome.
But it's like, so I played it for a couple hours, which is a Vita game, it's super fun to control, but it also exhibits a lot of weird Japanese isms that make it almost, you know, kind of towing the line of bizarre and unsavory, but also they don't go far enough.
When you say bizarre and unsavory, do you mean in a storytelling way or in like a gameplay way?
I mean, gameplay is fine. I'm talking like game design and aesthetic design and the artistic.
Tell me what you mean, because I don't know very much about this game. Tell me what you mean by unsavory. Give me an example.
Well, so it seems like the game is trying to like be this mature anime-ish story about this like girl who's like, I have amnesia. I was created by a Japanese studio, and she's like, everybody hates me. Nobody's gonna be my friends. And then it's like, oh, Officer Hot Cop, like, let me talk to you. And then
Hot Cock?
Hot Cop. He's a cop, you sicko. God damn it. It's not that Japanese. I said it towed the line. So she's talking to this guy and you're like, oh, okay, like we're talking in cutscenes, like he's like, I'm the authority figure, like tuxedo mask dude who sucks, and you're like the Sailor Moon. And it's like, all right, I get it. Like, obviously, this was made by people who have social issues and couldn't translate them correctly. But then it goes into the cutscenes and it goes in a completely different direction where it's like, oh no, she's all stumbly and she tripped and her butt fell in the air and she's it's like, and then he's like, zoinks, my cheeks are red. Oh man, you're so embarrassing and clumsy. And she's like, I can control gravity with my magic cat, yet here's my butt cheeks. And like, all right.
I only remember one particularly blatant scene where she's just naked in front of him, just because Japan.
Yeah. There. It's like, so part of like the weird game design thing is like, okay, I can see. If you're designing a game and you're like, okay, so our central premise is you fly around the world, defying gravity, you zoom in a direction that you choose, and you have a timer, and you can land, and you can distort gravity, but you need to return to normal, otherwise, you know, bad. So that you build that as your central thing, and it's like, so what do we do with this concept that we have? And their choice was like, let's make a billion fetch quests to get furniture for your sewer apartment. And then as soon as you do the first prologue quest stuff for that, it's like she's like, I'm so confused about this way of life, but I like furniture. And then her like house collapses, and she's just in a towel naked. And like her towel explodes off afterwards too, and you're like, now you're just under a dresser naked.
This sounds a lot, and by a lot I mean like a lot, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and the beginning of 3.
Shut your mouth. 2 is a majesty.
I completely agree. But they find the sewer apartment, and they make it fucking crazy, and then it gets busted up.
The one thing it doesn't feature is an obnoxious little kid.
Yeah.
So what like about
every 90s sequel has to have an obnoxious little kid. Sorry, go ahead, Jamie.
The game doesn't. Okay, I know nothing about this game. Please correct me if I'm wrong, and I have a feeling I will be. The game doesn't seem story heavy. It seems just like running heavy.
There's actually a surprising amount of narrative in the game, I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely open world. Like, it may surprise you that it is an open-world game where it's like, do you want to do these races side missions or talk to dude side missions or fetch furniture side missions?
Don't do that.
Or do you want to go progress the story with this weird Japanese bullshit of, like, this guy is probably anti-God?
Do that.
Yeah. I feel like this is a problem with Japanese games, like, largely, because, like, Xeno, the new, what's it called? Xeno, Jeff?
X.
Blade. Xenoblade, like I felt so frozen by the mass of side quests that I couldn't continue in the game. It was, and then in Ni no Kuni, same thing. Fantastic game, but there's a hell of a lot to do, and I feel like it's just kind of filler.
But this is the thing. So with both Xenoblade, I haven't played Ni no Kuni enough to know, but at least with Xenoblade and with Gravity Rush, you need to just realize that you should not do those side quests. Just stop.
Mm-hmm. Just do the main story. Kill God.
Exactly.
Grow wings.
Don't do any races, Griffin, because if you do the side quests, you're like literally doing it wrong.
Yeah.
The best part of that game is just traversing the world.
Totally.
Going to the cool looking places in the storyline. You know, weird, mysterious, lost type, you know, strange shit that will never adequately be explained.
Everything is lost.
Dudes that open up their bellies to other dimensions.
Ooh. Oh, so it's like Shadows of the Damned.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I actually quite enjoyed the story. And I really like the heroine. I did not like the nudifying of her, the you know, her falling out of her towel. I feel like Japan just can't resist doing that to all of their females. But
wait a second. Are you telling me that there's something wrong with it when Kojima posts earlier today on Twitter that he tried to sexify, he told his character artist to sexify all his dudes, and then he posted a picture of how he wants to show off Quiet to give the full character model, and he just posted a picture of her like thong butt.
Yep.
And then like 8,000 characters of him trying to explain what he was doing.
The English translation of that is hilarious.
The erotification?
The word erotic appears like at least 5 times.
Erotification.
You guys have probably already talked about Killer is Dead, right?
Not at all.
No? Okay. So that. I'm just adding that into this conversation about sexism, Japanese people. I'm just going to say Killer is Dead. That's it.
That's the lowest of the low, I feel like.
Yeah. I have like... Yeah, like in that game, there's a vortex coming out of a demon woman's vagina.
I can't fault that too much, because I think that's kind of what Suda51 has defined as his own style. Like, you can't fault Japanese game design when it comes to Suda games, I feel like, because he's already made it his shtick of like, this is gonna be about dicks and vaginas and everything will relate to that. Like,
well, I've never played
he's the HR Geiger of video game design.
I've never played a Suda 51 game, but all the reviews were, well, not all of them, some of them were saying, actually a criticism that I've heard of Saints Row 4, which is that like previous Suda games and Saints Row 3 were grounded in reality and sprinkled with absurdity. And now Saints Row 4 and Killer is Dead is grounded in stupidity and insanity and sprinkled with reality.
That is opposite of what is true.
Okay. I haven't played either of those games. That's just what I've heard.
Yeah, so that's wrong. 100%. Saints Row 3 is not grounded in reality.
But sprinkled with insanity.
It is.
Yeah, pretty much all insane as far as I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Saints Row 3 does a really good job of like starting. It's kind of pulling the rug out from under you, where you're playing the game and you're like, oh, this is 100% GTA, but it's funnier because there's good writing and it's taking itself kind of tongue in cheek. And then it just jumps the shark and it's like, okay, now everything is fucking stupid and crazy and ridiculous and reality goes out the window because you're invulnerable to everything. I guess I can see if you're saying it's grounded in reality, but definitely not. I don't know. That's a weird reality to live in if that's the case. And then same for Suda 51 games. Like if you're talking about like No More Heroes, that game is not grounded in reality. That's
Yeah, I think that's the least of its problems, to be honest. I was just gonna finish up quickly about Gravity Rush, just so we can move on from that if you want. I just wanted to say that Kat, they exploit her sexuality as they do with every female character. But she's like, unlike every other Japanese hero and heroine, she's like plucky and like not insufferable. I find her character to be one that I can actually deal with and not just be really angry at all the time.
Sure.
Which is a rare feat for Japanese games nowadays. she's like a normal person with normal emotions, and she chats with her cat, and she sounds like an actual like female might possibly sound.
Yeah.
Which I was impressed by. And like what'd you say, Griffin?
I was just grunting.
Oh. I was going to say that, like, even, like, when she's, like, attracted to a guy, it's not, like, gross or weird. It's just like, oh, he's a cute guy or whatever. It just, for whatever reason, I found her believable in her little chatty moments, but I definitely did not like when she fell over and her towel fell off.
Right, that's right. That's all. I have no problem with the character. So far, she seems inoffensive at best. Like I like the chatting with the cat things. She seems fine, but I guess I also don't know. I was also kind of watching Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball at the same time. I was like, ooh, this is good. and kind of just floating around and shooting things.
How awesome is just falling through the air, though?
It's so really cool. Good, which is why I think I had that weird epiphany, like, when I was playing Saints Row, and I was, like, trying to figure out how to control. Like, I was literally going from one to the other, and, like, oh, geez, these games are way too similar.
You probably talked about it at length, Griff, but what's your, like, quick takeaway for Saints Row 4?
We talked about it a bit last week, but I finished it this week. And my revised opinion on Saints Row 4 is it is a very good game. It has destroyed the open world genre to the point of you kind of can't play games like that anymore because of what that game has done. But it also...
It's the David Cage.
What?
It's a David Cage of games.
Sure. Like, you can't play David Cage games? Or what are you talking about?
I mean, who's it? Philip Glass. This is the guy.
I can't listen to repetitive Enya-like music.
John Cage? John Cage?
John Cage.
It's the 4-minute and 30 seconds of video games?
Yeah.
It's like an utter... Like
yeah.
I sit at the controller and I just look at a blank screen for 4 minutes.
You have an N-Gage in your hands and you're just staring at it with a look of existential dread.
N-Gage John Cage. I shoved all these razor blades and saws into my piano and tried to play my Vita.
Do you agree with Giant Bomb's supposition that it leans too heavily on Saints Row 3?
Absolutely. That was what I was going to say before you brought up the cages. It is... I would say the best thing about Saints Row 4 is, I told Jeff this last week, the best thing about Saints Row 4 is it is kind of an ultimatum to go play Saints Row 3 before you play Saints Row 4.
That's what I heard. I've heard that a lot. So actually, I started playing it. 3, that is.
Good.
Because I never really got into it. But I love that game.
You should.
I'm not very far.
Saints Row 4 does a lot of really good things in terms of gameplay, but it also completely destroys the franchise by how it lets you break open world gameplay and embraces it. But it doesn't do anything new or interesting with writing or narrative or anything.
One more question.
Flat.
One more question about this, because you already talked
but
about
totally
it.
But totally fun!
One more question. Did you... And you don't have to answer this if you already talked about it. Did you play it on consoles? And if so, was it like so slow that you can't really recommend people play it on consoles?
I have played Saints Row 3 and 4 on consoles, specifically on PlayStation 3. And Saints Row 4, as I was telling Jeff, had bugged the fuck out to the point of almost unplayable.
Okay.
Was it like Skyrim PS3 levels of bad?
No, not in any way where it's like, oh, this is destroying the aesthetics and my enjoy. Like, so I played Far Cry 3 on the Xbox 360, and I was like, yeah, this doesn't look great. Like, it doesn't look like sexy smooth real textures, but it's still totally fun and fine. Whereas Saints Row 4, I never had issues with like frame rate or like things kind of getting bogged down with everything that's happening on the screen that is happening as fast as it actually is, which is quite fast and quite frequent.
Mm-hmm.
But in a game where you are breaking the game's kind of engine on a moment by moment basis, you can run into a lot of hairy situations. So in the back third of the game, I cracked it. And every time I started, like when I would hard stop my game, shut off my system, start my game, it would start my save with an audio file being read halfway through. And then every mission that I would go on to, there was a 50-50 shot of the checkpoint resetting. Like when you would get to like mid-mission and they're like, oh, you great job, you've done this. Now it's time to go on and do this. There's a 50-50 chance that would bug out and I would either my screen would lock up or I just couldn't move or I
bizarre.
Yeah, just now the thing that's even more bizarre is that is a thing in the game. Like, it is Fez, and it's like, we're gonna mess with the fourth wall of like, hey, games shouldn't do this. Like, there's a point in the game where you have to break the game, and everything is blowing up and things don't make sense and people are bugging out and their eyeballs are 18 times the size of their head and the cars are upside down and all this stuff like that. That is a thing that is native to the regular game, but there's a difference between designed failure and like actual failure when your system just hard locks or you can't walk.
But you're doing a launch PS3 though, right?
Yes.
Do you think it might be that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it could entirely be my system. Like, I don't want to go out and blame the game for saying and say that, like, it is the PlayStation 3 is unplayable. Like, I don't know. Like, from my experience with my hardware, I could have just, like, I think I may have also prompted it in a couple places where, like, I did something that they probably weren't anticipating I was going to do. And it had repercussions throughout the rest of the mission that completely destroyed my mission. And I had to go like hard restart. And I had some freezes during auto saves. So I think that some of my stuff had gotten corrupted.
Gotcha.
But I mean,
what better commercial for a PlayStation 4?
So, you know,
I was going to go with you done change the game.
Yes. I can fault the game, but I can't fault the game. It is, I guess, more complex. My situation is made more complex by what I have.
In the GB Quick Look, they were showing some stuff where you have to run really, really fast.
You should look at my thing.
Your thing? And on the okay. And it just looked like it would be terrible. But good
it's
to
not.
Know. Because
it's not
I,
terrible.
I plan on buying it, and now I'll definitely get it on PC.
Yeah, get it on PC. I mean, if you're looking at games and you're like, well, that frame rate is a bunch of bubkiss, like, then you need to get it on a PC, not a PS3.
There's like a terrible valley. If you imagine like the time you own a PC on the x-axis and your snootiness on the y-axis, it's like an inverted bell curve. And so now I'm on like the other side of the valley.
Yeah, I feel your pain completely, Jamie.
No, I'm on the other side though. I'm on the other side. So there was a point where I was super snooty.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm on the other side.
Okay, we've made it.
Yes, I picked up Brothers, that game that you were talking about recently.
Brothers.
Brothers.
The one with the two brothers you control with two sticks.
Oh yeah.
Four brothers. That came.
Four brothers. Yeah, exactly.
This is the new One Direction album.
Five Brothers, the hamburger place?
Five Guys. Five Guys, the official license video game.
Brothers, Five Guys?
I learned about hamburger syndrome today, but I won't talk about it.
I think you have to.
Hint, diarrhea.
Hey, you know another disease that causes diarrhea?
Hamburger syndrome.
Dumping syndrome.
Yeah, well, that's like a real thing that you can't make fun of. Hamburger syndrome is like you just ate a shitty hamburger, and now you have E. coli, and you have hamburger toxin up inside you. You're gonna shit it out for a while. End of story.
Speaking of shitting yourself, brothers. So Brothers came out on Steam and PS3, and I actually grabbed it on PS3 rather than Steam. And I have very much been gravitating back towards...
Brothers!
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited! Go
yeah,
on.
I've been gravitating away from PC gaming and back towards couch gaming. And I
Yay!
Actually... Well, I actually built like a weaker, tiny form factor PC as well that
awesome.
I put under my TV that awesome. I told Jamie about. And it's not like a graphics powerhouse at all. It's got like a shitty little AMD APU in it, which is what the next gen consoles will have, except this one has way worse graphics. And it can like run basic games. But like, I think I'm going to be doing a lot more gaming just on the couch, like on my PS3 and stuff like that. So I completely understand that bell curve. It's like you have that moment where you crest and you're like at the very maximum of like graphics and frame rates, and then you just start getting incredibly sick of it.
Yeah, because you realize you could spend, you could buy like three Titans, triple SLI them, you could buy the craziest i7, and your computer would still be a buggy piece of crap. And then, and at that point, you're like, you know what, whatever, I don't care. But it's that initial expectation of excellence that's at least for me, just ruined games for like, I don't know, a month.
Wow.
But it got better.
I don't think I had quite as dramatic an experience. I like, I don't know, I just kind of got sick of sitting at a computer mostly. Just desired having a couch and not really cared as much about, you know, things being super crisp.
I'm sure that the setup that I have currently for my PC is like eons better than any console that I have, but for me it's just like I can play more games now. Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, my PC is just like my indie games that don't that aren't on console yet device right now, pretty much. I'm not playing it at all.
If I play an FPS, I'll play it on the PC. I'll talk about Metro after you talk about Brothers.
Okay. I will talk about Brothers real quick.
Okay, talk about Brothers. I'm going to step up for a sec. So,
yeah, go ahead.
How much? First of all,
I believe it's $15.
Okay.
So Brothers, I've only played about the first hour, but I really like it. Jamie, you already know kind of the basic gist of it. You got two guys you control. The older brother you control with the left analog stick, and the younger brother you control with the right analog stick. So it's sort of like self co-op play. The closest analog I can think of actually is like the Mario and Luigi franchise, which has you controlling both brothers at the same time.
Mm.
And it's very jarring at first, but I can already tell that there's going to be some really cool gameplay opportunities. And like both of the brothers, like the younger brother is like more mischievous and like prone to like kind of being a dick. I brought the both of the brothers to a flower, and you have one interaction button. So I brought the older brother there first, and I interacted with the flower, and he just sniffed the flower and was like, ah. And then I brought the younger brother there, and he just smashed the vase.
That's so funny. That's awesome.
There's actually puzzles you can do where, like, you'll encounter, like, a guy sleeping at a bridge, and you'll bring the older brother over, and he'll, like, try to shake the guy to wake him up, and the guy will, like, kind of wake up but then go back to bed. And then you have the younger brother try to do it, and he throws a bucket of water on him.
This is amazing.
Really cool.
This is exactly what I love. I love when they can convey the story through just the gameplay without cutscenes.
Yeah, and not only – well, there are cutscenes. They're not major cutscenes, though, and there's an interesting choice, which I really like. There is no dialogue of any kind.
Nice.
It is all like Simlish or like in a process speak. It's like – and like you can hear them talking enough to know that the brothers have like names. But you can't understand any of the shit they say. So all of it is like them emoting and like them pantomiming activities.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And so far, the narrative has been delivered incredibly well without any dialogue at all. It doesn't feel like stupid or weird. All I know so far is my daddy's sick. I like the beginning of the game. The two brothers brought them together on like a wheelbarrow. Over to like the village elder.
Oh my god,
that was really cool.
This game's gonna break me.
Yes, it was so funny. I went into town.
Like, yeah.
So after you like get like a map to where the cure for your dad is, and you go to town and you encounter this guy. He's basically like you know in Ocarina of Time when you have...
Well, I don't. But go on.
Oh, you never played it?
I never got far. Go on.
You don't have to get far. Do you know when you have to get your sword in the very beginning? And that guy is like a total dick. He's like, I'm not going to let you go see the tree unless you have a sword, asshole.
Oh, yes. I do recall this.
And he like, you can't sneak around him. He's like blocking the way. There's just a guy like that who just tried to walk down.
He won't let you.
And he's like in front of you and he's like, ha ha.
Jerk.
And then, and the guys are like, rah, 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 rah. And
I love that.
You sneak around him, and he just keeps blocking you, and he's just like a total dick, and you have no idea why.
That sounds incredible. This game is. I saw some footage, and I was just immediately captivated.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's got kind of a unique look to it. It's like halfway between like Disney and like a more serious, less Pixar-ish style. It definitely walks a good line. It's not too much like every other game, but it's not too much into that like kind of Pixar category, which is a little bit of a turnoff for me.
Oh, really? I also appreciate, I heard it's like 3 or 4 hours long. I'm fine with that. As long as, like, it's 3 or 4 hours long with no filler, I hear.
That's fine by me.
Yeah, that's fine by me, too.
I'm really liking what I play. And I'm also really liking how if you take the time to, I can tell it's going to be a pretty linear game for the most part. But if you take, and that's not a problem. I know sometimes you think that can be for me, but that's not a problem. Like, if you take the time to explore the world, like, you'll get rewarded with little interactions. Like, I went over to look at a scarecrow, and, like, the younger brother, like, tried to imitate the scarecrow and, like, posed like the scarecrow, and the camera, like, zoomed in to look at him. So there's, like, all these little rewards that you get for interacting that kind of deepen or, like, add more color and flavor to the world.
What is it about things not being mandatory that makes them so much more special?
Jeff, that reminds me. Speaking of getting rewarded for doing dumb stuff, the trophies on the Vita are a billion times more adorable.
Just because they're tiny? Or?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
They are cute. I will agree with you. I was going to say something else about the Vita, actually, now since you jumped back to it. Have you done any gyro on it yet?
Yeah, VLR had a mission with the gyro, and I think that it was not designed with the Vita in mind.
Probably. I think gyro on Gravity Rush actually completely sold me on gyro, and I feel like it should be in every game.
Is it more than just like when you're looking at the comic book pages?
Oh, yeah. You can use it to make fine adjustments to your aim.
Oh, okay.
I think that's like the perfect application for gyro. I think that's something that should be taken away from the Vita and put on the PS4.
Is there a Greek sandwich inside the Vita?
There it is. Feta cheese.
Cucumber mayonnaise.
You make me want to buy one of these little devices.
They're only $199.
There is
actually
No better time.
No, there is a better time when they redesign it.
Or when you just wait and the price goes down further.
But now, oh man, but Jamie, now you can play all your PS4 games on your Vita.
Oh, it's the perfect companion device.
The library is unlimited.
I want Jafar. Unlimited power.
I wish that I wish they would give you a discount if you bought a PlayStation 4.
Oh, so but yeah. So I bought it at the Best Buy, and the little very helpful clerk who was trying to, oh, this is what I forgot to tell you, Jeff. So I went to 2 Best Buys because they didn't have any Vitas in stock. Mm. So interesting little thing there.
Yeah, that's
Targets,
actually,
no Vitas. Best Buy, wow. No Vitas.
Wow.
I didn't go to game stores, but when I went to the second Best Buy, they had 1 Wi-Fi model, and then they had 4 3G Walking Dead bundles. And that was more
really
than
odd.
Any other store.
I'm
Target,
surprised.
Target that's completely out.
I'm surprised that the 3G model is still being bundled with new shit.
Right? That's why I was thinking, like, two years ago. It just must be a clearing of stock. Like, it just must be, you know, like a culling.
I guess so.
Culling. I really want one. Every time I play with one, which is, like, every time I go into any store, I drool a little bit.
It is an amazing piece of hardware. I really hope it sticks around for a long time. Just if it's an indie machine, I'm perfectly happy with that because I fucking love indies.
For sure. If it is a way to play indie games that are on my PS4 on a handheld device, then I'm totally into that.
Yeah, definitely.
I even liked the idea of having a shield so I could stream my PC games. So yeah, that's very compelling to me.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And then plus, when like Jamie, when you see that screen of that Vita when you're playing games on it, it's just like, oh god, like you touch it in the store and you play it there, it is so much brighter after you own one.
Yeah, and there's no like little kid puke on it or whatever.
Right. Yep. Yeah, like that layer of Vaseline that come off like kids' hands in stores.
In the Best Buy where I play with it most frequently, they like set it up like so there's the video games on like the left side of the store, and then there's like pro audio on the right. And for some reason, it's like buried in there, so no one ever touches it. And I feel like it's pristine. But
that's
go awesome. On.
That's yeah. very rare for a Best Buy.
They like completely fucked it up, but what were you going to say, Jeff?
I don't recall, but there is definitely a non-functioning PS3 in my Best Buy that has just been there for like a year.
For years.
What was I going to say?
Something about Brothers. I interrupted you.
Oh, yeah. I just really like that it rewards you for like exploring the world and interacting with shit in the world. Like, just gives you – it helps flesh out the story. And like you said, Jamie, it's purely optional, but it's like – it's like it's enough. It's like it's the kind of thing that not everyone needs, but people like us would really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why it works so perfectly, because a lot of people just don't need it or want it, but we like seek it out, and this is like the best way for us to get it. Like to have to work a little bit for it.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. I'm excited for that game a lot. I completely forgot about it. I got so excited for it. This is one of those things where it's like sometimes indies need to get their PR together, because that game was reviewed. Like they sent out review copies. So Polygon reviewed it, blah, blah, blah. And on Polygon's review, it says release date, TBA. And then it gets lost in the fucking ether. And it's like, you have to tell me when I can buy your thing.
Jamie, you gotta hit up NeoGAF.
I guess.
Oh, I
know. You need to own all systems at all times, because it was a part of XBLA's Summer of Arcade.
It's weird because nobody knew it was coming to PlayStation Network Steam so yep. quickly.
Yep. But which is probably why it was TBA. Like it was like, when will it move off of the Xbox onto things people actually played on? Because nobody does Summer of Arcade anymore.
I wonder what their sales numbers were. They probably had like an exclusivity agreement where they had to surrender all their profits if they went to another platform, but they just made no money. So they're like, fuck it, port it to Steam immediately.
I'm really excited for that. I like this trend of 2-3-4 hour games, but no filler whatsoever. Gone Home was like that. Did you finish that, Jeff?
I still haven't really tried to get it to work because, like I said, it doesn't work with my antivirus at all.
Oh, okay. Griffin, did you play that?
Nope.
That's a great game. Do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, of course.
Don't spoil too much, Jamie.
I won't. Actually, you know, Giant Bomb did like the best quick look ever, because they played it for like – okay, the game takes place in a house. They played it and they like didn't even go in the house. They were in like the entranceway. And then Vinny was like, yeah, if this looks cool to you, just don't watch this anymore. Just go play it. And I did that. I beat it in one sitting. It couldn't have taken more than 2 or 3 hours. And I played it with Shannon. And it is amazing. I feel, without talking about the plot at all, I feel like it does what... It follows closely on the heels of The Last of Us, in that it's not treading on any new territory, but what it is doing is it's doing it with subtlety, and
oh, that's awesome.
And also it's doing it without cutscenes, which is like my jam, and it's got the right atmosphere, and even on just like a like if this were like a book, like if I had read this, mm-hmm. I would say that it has one of like the best implemented red herrings in like things that I've read or experienced, movies, everything recently. So I really really liked it. You guys should give it a shot. It's really like just an afternoon.
Sure,
that's awesome.
I want to play it because I want to be aware of it. To have the critical mindset, like to have my own opinion on it without, you know, hearing others. However, everything that I have seen from it, and all like the inflated obsession, like the all like the gaming spooge on it right now, just makes it seem to me like it's missed without the puzzles.
Missed without the puzzles?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Like you're exploring this location. And you're interacting with things. However, they have no bearing because you don't actually need to complete anything to progress. You're just in this environment. Like, it is essentially like an environment simulator.
So you're worried about a lack of goals?
Worried, I think, is a strong word. I think it's just like, I want to make my own opinion and play it, but everything that I've heard about it makes it sound completely uninteresting.
It's a very odd experience.
Because it's not really a game.
It's like, when I think about games that I would give perfect scores if I had to review them, I think about games like Last of Us, and I have like this deep-seated like fan love of The Last of Us deep in my soul, and it's, and it like burns like a fire inside me. And this game, I would give this game perfect score like everyone's doing, but I don't think about it that way. Like, I think about the experience of actually playing the game as like, eh. But it just like, I feel like the reason why I would give it a perfect score is because this game is showing why games, I mean, this is going to sound really pretentious and stupid, but this game to me is showing why games exist. It does stuff that a movie couldn't do, and it does stuff that a book couldn't do.
Okay, that's what I need to hear.
Yeah, that's important.
And like that's it. You're playing it, you're not going to be like, oh man, this is like cool. But I mean, actually, I did feel that way a lot.
So
is it
more than like you find this note and then you turn the note over and there's another note on the back?
No, you don't even turn the note over.
Oh, thank God!
It's just there.
Gone home. You don't even turn the note over. that's your quote that you supplied.
10 out of 10. Graphically, it's not special. Like in terms of like how you interact with the, I mean, it's like it's kind of like, I mean, it was made by like two dudes or something, and it, you know, it looks that
two
way.
Two brothers.
And it feel...
a story of sons.
There's so many things in it that I'm just like, yep, this is a game. Like when you open a door, like a doors can open both ways, like hinges don't work that way, but and there's no mirrors in the house because they didn't render you, which actually
my parents didn't render me.
Whether it's a conscious decision or not, I think it helps the game that you never see yourself. There's like no music. It's like the shittiest thunder sound over and over again. But mechanically,
it's not on top, but it's got other things going for it.
Yeah, it's not broken. It's just like
another resounding quote from James Scherer.
It's not broken. You need that delivery too.
But the acting is, if the acting in this game wasn't good, no one would be giving this game a 10 out of 10. All the notes are red. So you pick up a note and then it's red. Or you hear a message around the answering machine and then it's spoken. So the acting is amazing. Oh, what else? You should play it. And the thing is, like, if someone hates The Last of Us, I'm like, oh, they're dumb. They don't know what. But if someone were to hate this game, I'd be like, yeah, that's. I totally know where you're coming from, but I still think that it's just really something special, and I think that everyone should at least try, or everyone should beat it. There's no reason not to beat it. It's two or 3 hours. Just beat it.
Just do it. Your recommendation means a lot to me, Jamie, and I was already pretty excited about it, so I'm definitely going to, once my antivirus works, I will definitely play it.
Yeah.
My friend was telling me, because my friend goes on 4chan, and he was telling me about what 4chan people think of it, and I was just like, this is why I don't go on 4chan at all.
This sounds like, to me, it's like a couple scotches, and I'll buy it, and then I'll play it later.
Yeah, play it while drinking, actually. Like, I think if I had, like, you know, two glasses of wine, that would be, like, the perfect time to play it. And I teared up a little bit at the end. I think I would have teared up more if I were a little drunk.
Are you dead the entire time?
No, that's like, okay, like that right there, the fact that like nothing like that happens is the reason why this game is amazing.
Is everybody else dead?
You'll see.
This is just the opposite of the Shyamalan effect.
It is literally like that is actually completely accurate. Like that might have been like the purpose of this game's development, is to be the anti-Shyamalan Ding Dong situation.
I think that's like a necessary, like to restore balance in the world, there has to be an anti-Shyamalan.
Yeah, like they're setting up Shyamalama Lama.
He's unleashed devil not only Devil the Movie, but also just the Devil.
Oh, you mean Avatar the Last Airbender.
Terrible movie. Jesus. I also played Metro last night. Did you guys, either you guys try that out? Because it was $20 on Steam.
I did not.
I don't play PC games.
Oh, okay. Metro Last Night is really aggressively mediocre, in my opinion.
Shots fired. Jesus.
I only played 94 minutes of it, according to Steam. But I think the reason why I'm kind of mad at it right now is because it got my hopes up. And then it's just a shitty shooter. I mean, it's not a shitty shooter. It's probably a gameplay-wise awesome shooter. Mm-hmm. But it just – so in the beginning – They do a really good job of setting up this atmosphere, even though the voice acting is so unbelievably awful, just so stilted, so unnatural. Their Russian accents are an abomination. Even if they're, I don't care if they're real, they just sound awful.
Can you change the language track to actual Russian?
I can change it to mute. I don't know. So they set up this great atmosphere, and it just kind of gets on this track where it's doing impressive things. There are nice little set pieces, and I'm just kind of like not excited anymore by that kind of thing. It's like, oh, we're on a chase. Oh, man, this scripted chase is happening. Like, this would have excited me in 2009, and it doesn't anymore.
So it... My impression of your impression and everybody else's impressions is that it is similar to Saints Row, where it is, if you haven't kind of suffered through the previous Metros and Stalker games, like, you won't really appreciate this game.
I don't know. So I was talking to Axel about it. He loved it. And if you just really love shooters and you just love, like, the mechanics of shooters, I can see why you would love this game. And one of the most interesting things it does is in the beginning you choose between Ranger mode and normal, I think it's called. Ranger mode, that's gameplay a la the first game where you have to conserve ammo judiciously. And then in normal mode, it's just like you have as much ammo as you need, just go to town. I think I made a mistake by playing normal mode because I don't have a lot of time on my hands. And I was thinking that I would get frustrated with Ranger mode, but now I think that if I'd played Ranger mode, it would have been a much more enjoyable experience. I mean, both games do really interesting things. Like, money is ammo, and it's really good ammo, and you have to decide, do I want to sell this ammo for other stuff, or do I want to, like, use it to shoot enemies? And that's an interesting decision that you have to make. It's scary, scary game. Good art. Graphics are obviously amazing. I can't max out Metro.
How is the fun factor?
I can't max. Well, people care about this with this game, and I understand why. Because when you put on 2033, the first one, there's the first scene. It's like, I think some European developer just sat in a basement for 2 years and thought about, like, light. And then he put it all into Metro. And so Metro is just, like, light everywhere all the time, coming out of different things. Like, and so you're not going to get that in this game. This game, like, takes the lighting effects, the particle effects, and tones it way down. So I can max this game. So it's not – if you're the kind of person who likes that kind of thing, it might let you down. What else about it? There's a lady in it. She's not sexualized. That's always good. She's wearing, like, a thick bear hide.
Tell me more about her thick bear
hide. Yeah, that's pretty sexy to me, baby.
No,
it's
seriously.
Just so standard. Here's the thing. You guys remember in Call of Duty 4, the first one, where you go and there's a guy and you get your guns and then he makes you do an obstacle course?
What game is this?
Yes. Familiar.
Yes.
Modern Warfare?
And that's happened in every shooter ever since then. So this has that. Oh. And I was just immediately like, fine.
I think I just don't really like FPS unless it's got like something unique going on about it. So
this does have a unique tone and story and good atmosphere. And maybe if I was playing in Ranger mode, I would say that it has a genuinely scary gameplay element too. But the way it is, it's just like, why don't you just mow down these beasts? Just mow them down with these guns that we're going to give you.
Well, Jamie, that sounds like the perfect segue to talk about this next game. Speaking of completely generic, non-inspired, vanilla nation of any previous gameplay modes, I played Lost Planet 3.
Nice.
Which looked so surprisingly promising and then wasn't.
Fall, yeah, yep.
We talked about that.
Mm-hmm. But now I've actually played it, and it's really weird.
Nolan's in it.
I mean, sure. He's in all of them.
Is he? I might have lied.
Actually, I don't know, but why not?
No, he's in Saints Row 4. I'm sorry.
He is, yes. He is in Saints Row 4. Lost Planet 3 is a very strange game because it doesn't really know what it wants to do, it seems. Like, it is certainly not Lost Planet 1 or 2, and it is certainly not Dead Space, and it is, because it doesn't commit to either fully, it just becomes this really weird, bland, kind of uninteresting experience. Like, it reminds me of Infinite Undiscovery.
Or I never played Infinite Undiscovery.
Okay, it reminds me of a game, a Japanese RPG for the Xbox 360 that was 100% forgettable, but totally serviceable, and it was like, if I got this from as my one game for the summer, I could play this forever. But I won't, because I'm not a fool.
That's how you would describe Lost Planet 3?
Absolutely. Yep. Like, there seems to be enough interesting stuff there, like with the mech combat, with the upgrades, with kind of like the open world side questing nature of the game. Like, there is certainly a lot to do, a lot to upgrade, a lot of things to go investigate. And Jeff, there is a lot of like you're just watching video files from your Earth wife. Like, very.
That's what I want. I want a game where you're like killing aliens while, yeah, a little video pops up. Can we take another stab at that?
But she can't be real.
The best thing about that game is when you're in the mech, you have a radio, and the radio is all space trucker music. Like, it's all mildly ambient Western acoustic guitar.
Nice.
That's really
like,
cool.
There's no lyrics. It's all just like strumming with the synth. It's very, very strange.
Absolutely.
But then it also retains like all the Lost Planet gameplay parts of like you shoot your grapple hook, but it strips away like the complete mobility that you had in Lost Planet 2. Like, you can only go to certain grapple points. Like, big monsters, I haven't encountered any yet after, you know, 3 hours of gameplay. But it's like you still shooting things in their goo spots, and then their orangeness erupts, and you kill them, and then you collect their goo. Yeah.
Sounds like
it's the exact. It does. It's like exactly. You're right. It's exactly the same problem that Metro Last Light is having. At the end of the day, you're still chucking grenades into spawn points and shooting the highlighty bit.
Yep.
That's what you're doing. Doesn't matter how they dress it up.
Yeah. And it the thing is with this game, though, it loses all of that kind of like uniqueness that was Lost Planet, for better or for worse. Like, yeah, Lost Planet 2 was a flaming garbage heap of a game, but it definitely had a flavor to it. Like, it may have tasted like ass, but at least it was something that you've never encountered before, and cool for that. This is like, yep. This is Gears of War, but the worst Gears of War you've ever played.
Oh, man.
So the wife yelly bits did not redeem it.
No.
Did the beard redeem it?
No, because on the console it looks extra shitty. Like, extra the beard may beard. Look way better in like PC architecture design programming shit. Like, regular beard just kind of looks like space pubes.
So someone
Lost Planet 3 Revisited, GeForce Titan Edition.
Lost Planet 4 will have Tress FX for the beard, but not for the actual hair. So the beard will look like a spaghetti monster, and the hair will just look like a piece of plastic.
I think that Dead Space 4 and Lost Planet 4 should pool their resources to just make another game happen.
Why don't they just do a massive crossover?
Yeah. Yeah. Dante's Inferno meets
all their shitty B-tier action games could just merge into one.
Yeah. Prototype, Darksiders.
People love Darksiders.
Homefront.
Oh, hey, now that's in a different league. At least there's something redeemable about all those properties I mentioned before.
Yeah. Jamie, you were going to say something, I think, before I cut you off.
No.
Okay.
No.
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 Never.
Spelunky's great. Love that game.
Yes.
Are you playing it on the PS3?
Yes.
Or the PC?
PS3.
Jamie, why don't you get a PS Vita so you can play on that?
You should get a Vita.
It's free. It's free with your Vita. You cross-bought it. You don't even know.
Go to hell.
You already own it. Jamie, you don't know how many games you already own for your Vita.
It's disgusting.
Your Vita has already paid for itself.
Jamie, if you buy a Vita, you have PlayStation Plus right now, right?
Of course. I have PlayStation Plus until 2015.
You have Gravity Rush right now.
You do.
It's free.
The way you said that really turned me on. But oh, and one more thing. Steve Jobs style, Gravity Rush. I will get one. Don't worry. I'll have to go to Japan to get it, though. I'll get a color that's only available in Japan.
If you start, you should get one at that store.
Yeah. Go talk to your friend. Pre-order one.
I was going to say, Jamie, if you are planning to eventually get one, you should start downloading Vita games for PS Plus now.
Do
at
it.
Least, like, at 3, least yeah. click to purchase them, so that way you won't lose the chance.
Yep. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Like, start socking them away like a squirrel in winter.
I also played just real quick, Jeff, because I know that you like Runner, and I bought Runner 2 on PC, and I didn't really play it for some reason, and it's free on Plus, so I started playing it again. I really like that game.
I love that game.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. I think it is. I think it took everything that was awesome about Runner, and with a few missteps, namely just the stupid rotational loops that you have to go through, made it like completely better.
One of my friends hates it because it's easier.
He's an idiot because you can adjust the difficulty to make it hard. Yeah, there's three difficulties.
I did not know that.
It has Charles Martinet in it.
He says his name. Yes.
He does.
And then he does advertisements.
Yes, hilarious advertisements.
I played Runner 2 as well, and I think the price of free is accurate.
You don't like it?
No, I don't dislike it. I had a great time playing it, but I think that if you exceeded like the iPhone $2.99 mark for it, it's not worth it.
Really?
It could be. I don't love runners. Like, it's not something for me. It's just a game that I find frustrating and tedious.
Mm.
But I can understand how some people would like it. It just it's not for me. Runners are not for me.
That's fair. I'm not a big fan of endless runners on the App Store. They're okay. I like Jetpack Joyride as much as the next guy. But I like BitTrip because it has enough like shit in it with like the rhythm elements and like the set stages and the different moves you can do that make it kind of just feel like a platformer. Like a really timing-based platformer. And also, like, when you're doing it right, it just, it literally feels like,
it feels amazing.
You're, like, conducting an orchestra.
Yeah.
Like, the little beats are so satisfying when you, like, jump and it's like, bum, 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 bum.
This one has a really good difficulty curve, which one did not.
It's quite gradual. I when I played it at PAX, like, 2 years ago, I was worried about that.
How far did you guys play in it?
I got to like the fifth world, I think.
Okay.
I'm not far at all. Okay. I'm not far at all.
Jeff, you're just like, you're a savant, so everything is way easy for you. So that makes sense.
Well, I did beat the first game. which has some extremely hard levels in it.
I beat the first game too, but that I threw the Wiimote a couple of times. It was even going upstairs. That was the kind of game where like you would be in a groove and you'd be going through really hard levels, and then you'd come back to it like the next morning, and you can't even go upstairs.
Going upstairs is like the first major learning curve of Bit Trip Runner.
Yeah. And in two, because you can glide a little bit, it's like not a problem. Hmm. Or can you glide in one?
You can glide in one.
Oh, okay. But it's harder. Why is it harder?
I don't know. Maybe it just looks less glidey. Maybe you probably just are so used to it. Because if you beat one, then you've mastered pretty much everything there is to master about his movements. So you're just so accustomed to them that it just comes naturally. But yeah, there's definitely a major learning curve. And you didn't play one, Griffin, I assume?
No.
Yeah. If you didn't play one, then it's probably you're having some of that initial frustration. But again, maybe it's just not. Maybe you just don't feel like overcoming it because you just don't like the premise enough.
I forced myself to play through the first world to see the boss because I was like, oh, cool, boss. I want to see what that's like to, you know, get a feel for what this game is going to be. And the boss was super cool. But getting up to it, like, I am constantly battling my compulsion of getting everything and then completing the levels. And I don't, that is not an enjoyable experience for me. It's my same issue with Dishonored, where it's like punishing you for being efficient and thorough.
I like that game.
That's a good one. Metro's trying to be a little bit like that, which is funny. There's like you sneak and stuff, but it's so poorly implemented. I was gonna say Runner makes the other Bitrate games look like a cakewalk. I mean, no. Runner is a cakewalk compared to the other Bitrip games. They're so hard.
Yes, they are.
They're so goddamn hard.
Did you beat the second stage in Bitrip Beat, Jamie? I think I did, finally. And the third stage is insane.
Okay, with Beat, I think I played a little bit and like I never touched it again.
I like that game a lot.
I like it too, but I don't want to feel the way it makes me feel. And
we should co-op that game when we're next together.
What's the one where you're... What's the shooter? Is it called Shooter?
Bitrip Fate.
Bitrip Fate. That game is hard. That game is tough. It had a better difficulty ramp than the original Runner, but that is a hell of a challenge. These indie guys are like masochists.
Did you play the one where you... This is the one that I couldn't even do at all. The one where you have to press the controller, the D-pad in the right direction and time your button presses.
Are you talking about Fate?
No, I think it's Core.
No, I did not play Core.
Okay, that is the hardest game I've ever played. I can't even beat the first level, I don't think.
Yeah,
those guys are crazy.
Yeah.
Runner is like masochistic, but not so much so that you don't have the drive to win if you like it.
Yes. It also just seems so like delightful and charming that you're like, I can't be mad at you. You're so cute and your music's so peppy and Charles Martinet.
Yeah. He wasn't in the first one, but Runner has always had a little bit more personality than the other games in the series, which is probably why they chose it for a sequel.
Protagonist.
Yes, of course. But it also had like it had more color. I mean, it had like an actual world where it was just like going through space.
Yes. Speaking of another Ren and Stimpy-esque animation style.
Most definitely.
Very powdered toast man.
Yeah. Those ads are just ripped from what's the creator's name? I can't remember anymore. But ripped from his head. I was going to say, speaking of awesome video game stores where you can purchase Vitas, Jamie, did you guys watch the Kickstarter video for Mighty No. 9?
Yes.
Featuring Keiji Inafune going to Super Potato.
Oh, I did.
Were you like, what? I was there.
Yep.
Yeah, me too.
One of my friends
but
was like,
also like the phantasmagoria, like the way too overwhelming sensory explosion of being in all those game stores when we were there was also like, they could all be the same and I won't know the difference.
It's easier if you're tinier. The tinier you are, the better you feel when you're in there. One of my friends texted me. He's like, I think Capcom's going to sue him. I'm like, nope.
Pretty sure he has friends at Capcom that he probably checked this out with.
Exactly.
The underlings who desperately want to leave.
I'm also certain that it's like, he's like, hey, copyright law, Japan.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Japan, like, doesn't know what the hell to do with Mega Man. Or rather, Japan. Capcom doesn't know what the hell to do with Mega Man.
Clearly,
so,
yeah.
Like,
Mega Man?
Mega Man. That's their next adventure. It's an iPhone game.
It's a text adventure. It's a mud.
And then it'll just be canceled.
Jeff, do you want to talk about Wonderful 101 at all? Or do you want to jump into this Mighty Number 9 before we wrap
this
up?
So I finally got around to playing the demo, and it is just batshit. It is like completely off the wall, insane. I had no idea what the fuck was going on. The drawing of the things is like, it's clear, it's got a super high learning curve if you like want to play the high difficulties, I can tell. But I was playing on like easy, like have a good time mode, and like shit was just slamming into me and knocking my guys like all the way across the room, and like all my dudes are just spreading out like everywhere and getting hit. And I had no idea what was going on. I could barely draw the shit I was supposed to do, but I was having an amazing time. Hmm. And it's just it's very fluid. It is completely goofy. It's just like, it is total Saturday morning cartoon, like you said, Griffin.
Yeah.
You're just running around, drawing shapes and turning shit with your giant hand and slashing swords and firing guns. And
is this a Wii U game I have craziness? To buy?
Oh, sorry, Jamie.
Is this a Wii U game I should buy with my money?
I think you should buy it and play it on a low difficulty and not worry about the fact that it's kind of extremely dumb.
Okay, that kind of answers my question. I was going to say, is the batshit craziness of it creating a less good product? Like, is that detracting from your experience, or are you embracing it like Bayonetta?
I think I'm completely embracing it. I think it is something that if you had a third hand, you could probably master. And I, by the end of the demo, like I was one of the cool things you can do. So Jamie, the way it works, you like draw shapes on your gamepad to make weapons.
Huh.
And, at first I like couldn't even make weapons. I was like, this is impossible. Like, how do you draw shit like mid combat? And I was starting to get better at it. And then later in the game, it's like, hey, you can draw more shit in the middle of combat while you have one thing out and make multiple weapons that are AI controlled. So like, by the end of the demo, I'd had a fist that I was controlling, and then a sword that I drew, and a gun that I drew, and they were all nuts. And it was the coolest thing in the world, and I have no idea what the hell was going on. It was just fun. And like, I mastered the blocking in the demo, and like enemies, when they hit you, it's a nice generous block length. So like, they hit you, and they just go flying off you and get stunned, and it's just awesome. Like the most fun, stupid thing in the world. And it's just like, it's so exuberant and goofy and kind of hard to control and master.
That's awesome.
And
I'm excited. I'm going to try it. There's a demo?
There is a demo. Grab it on the eShop. Definitely play it all the way through. It's about, I'd say about 40 minutes maybe. When you first start it, you're going to be like, this controls awesome, or not controls awesome. This looks and feels awesome, but I will never like be able to handle it, and it's just way too much for me. But if you play all the way through the demo, you will probably change your mind a little bit.
I was reminded by looking up its price on GameStop that you not only have a 2DS to buy coming up, Jeff. you have to buy both versions of the 3DS XL for Pokemon X and Y.
No, they're not good enough. I'll show you the one that I want. Are you on any services right now?
On any services?
Like GChat or the like?
Yes, send it.
Okay. I have to remember what it looks like. If that's good enough. Oh, perfect. Okay. I'm going to show it to you.
You guys probably talked about the 2DS. I learned today that it's just one giant screen, which I think is hilarious.
Well, that's what the rumor is. It's not clear that that's true. Jeremy Parrish, of all people, was like, hey, guys, it's one giant touchscreen. Trust me. And no one else has actually said that. They've just reported what Jeremy Parrish said. Mm. So it could, I think it is one big screen. I don't think it's one giant touchscreen, but yeah, I think that's really cool. And I've watched a video of the device, and I actually really like the way it looks, and I will probably one day buy one.
Oh, this 3DS is beautiful, Jeff.
Isn't it though?
Why is it called the LL?
It's Japanese.
Okay. Sick.
I know.
Awesome. So now I have a game to play, but Jeff, the Wii U is dead. Didn't you get the memo? It's dead. I burned it. I blew it up.
I'm surprised you've resisted the urge to sell. I'm very proud of you.
I'm not going to sell it. I'm going to wait until they give me my Cat Mario.
Yeah.
I need it.
That's going to be fun.
The Cat Mario?
Yeah. I'm hoping it'll just limp along on first party content.
It will.
Wow. Yeah. I'm excited for Wind Waker. I'll play that.
I would play it.
I got Ganon statue pre-order.
Nice. I don't really want to spend $60 on it, but I will play it eventually. Well, no, I won't, because it'll never go down in price because it's a Nintendo game. But
Animal Crossing, remember, it was all over the place with price, so maybe that's not true anymore. Who knows?
A sign of things to come.
Yeah.
It's got stiff competition from Xbox One, because when you go to GameStop.com, the entire fucking screen is an Xbox One pre-order thing.
Wow. Microsoft gave them $1 million for that.
It's like the whole thing is green, and there's a Kinect on one side and a controller on the other. And it's just buy.
Did you hear the news that apparently Xbox One pre-orders will most likely get a free game in the U.S. as well?
Oh, really?
Yep. Some people are thinking it might be Rise, which is like the one game I would never, ever want to get.
Rise, Son of FIFA. It's FIFA but with Roman soldiers, and they just kill each other. The funny thing is,
shields.
So a lot of people at my school play FIFA, right? And I'm like in awe of this. So I sat down and watched some FIFA, and I always had in my head this idea that like there was an art to FIFA,
yeah,
and there must be like some deep mechanical stuff that you need to understand to do well in FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it's literally just, it's like you get the ball and you kick it. There's nothing to it. I don't understand why people are so obsessed with it.
Is it more or less fun than NFL Blitz?
It's less fun than NFL Blitz. It's like slow and like, I think people just love soccer so much that they just need their fix.
Yeah, it's true. Griffin was telling me last week how apparently they have tons of microtransactions in it, because you have to buy the good players, essentially, and they have contracts, and they expire.
That's so funny.
So many games.
That is so funny.
Yep.
It's funny because that's actually when I was sitting down and I was like asking my friends, like, who's the best FIFA player? Why are they the best? Blah, blah, blah. They didn't really answer me, but they did say, like, I love playing with this person. Or, like, look at my team. I have these people on it. And I'm like, okay, all right. It would be as if like people played Smash Brothers because they loved Pikachu, not because
and Pikachu cost like $5 to buy for 100
matches.
I don't understand it. Yeah, for me, NFL Blitz is like the pinnacle of sports games. It's just have you played like NFL Blitz for a significant amount of time?
Yeah, I played the 64 one.
It's like, amazing. I love that game.
Incredible. I also played NBA Jam in an arcade a lot.
Yes.
There used to be arcades on Route 22 in New Jersey, and they had an NBA Jam cabinet. But then it was replaced by a Mortal Kombat 3 cabinet. So that was sad. But I do like Mortal Kombat 3.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat's okay. I don't understand why people want their sports and racing to simulate real life. I think it is very sad, and I want shit to explode. I want people to fly around the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
I want tackles that take down like half the entire team.
Yeah. Have these people seen real life?
It's terrible.
Yeah.
You can get a concussion. I'm sure there are concussions in FIFA 14. Like, I am 99% sure.
I hope so.
This is not right.
So they think it's going to be Rise, huh?
I mean, people are just speculating. It's going to be something. So who knows?
Could be FIFA. Over here too. People love that shit. Do you think that will help them?
No, because it's only for pre-orders. I don't think it's going to make a big difference. We'll see though. I mean, it might. It'll do something. Griffin and I were talking about it. I mean, FIFA is a big deal in Europe, and it's going to do something. But the fact remains that they are still $100 more, and the psychological value of having like $399 versus $499 is just going to trump whatever you pack in there. Even if you threw in two games, I mean, maybe then it would start to look equal, but you know, it's a hard sell to say, hey, give me $100 more right now. That's why people pay, you know, $200 for phones and pay out their ass rather than paying $649 up front. It's exactly the same psychology. So
yep. And Sony's, like, you know, they've been bold, and they came out with a million pre-order number, and I'm sure if Xbox had made that number, they would say it too. So I'm pretty sure that they're not there yet.
No, I don't think they're there yet. I mean, I think they're going to struggle. I think they're going to be lagging behind Sony. We'll see how they do. I mean, the thing is, the amount of money Microsoft and Sony have thrown into, like, this their war with each other has weakened both of them so much in the, like, their respective spaces. Like, Microsoft didn't really make that much money on the 360, all told.
Interesting.
And there's even talk, like, I've looked at some sites, and they're like, you know, if they don't do well on the Xbox One, like, the new CEO after Ballmer might be like, hey, like, why do we have the Xbox division? Like, even though, like, the Xbox 360 was, like, you know, in the end was the most popular console.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they threw so much money into it, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to them. So we'll have to see. I mean,
yeah, it seems like they view the console wars as like a Pyrrhic victory they have to win. But the reason why is murky.
That's very well said, Jamie.
Like, why? Like, what do they gain? Do they think that? I guess they. I mean, they've been marketing it as this is their way into your living room life. And I guess they see that as a monetarily rewarding space to be. But
I guess so. I mean, look, they've tried to put themselves in every space they possibly can. I mean, look what they're doing with Nokia. They just will not give up on Windows Phone. They just want to be everywhere. And they're like, if there's a market, we have to put ourselves there. But they were so successful last generation. It would be a shame, I think, even though I don't really like Microsoft, if they exited so quickly. But we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I think they're going to do fine this generation, but I don't know what that means for the next generation, because they didn't really make that much when you weigh the balance sheets on the
Xbox.
That's
interesting.
So
I feel like they tried to build a broader gaming empire with games for Windows Live and all that, and nothing really stuck, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's that they didn't really have like a long game after like Xbox Live blew up and people were all playing COD. They're like, okay, what now?
And like, I think you guys are shortchanging Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? How do you feel differently?
Well, you guys are like you're claiming that. I mean, it sounds like you're saying they're dead. Like it's going to be a struggle, uphill battle point. Like
no.
I don't think it is. I think they have completely revolutionized, you know, the console market space, and they will continue to do so. But just like, you know, the Wii U, the Wii, when it pissed off gamers when it first came out, and it's like, oh, nobody likes this thing because it's for baby grandmas. But you know, the Xbox One, it's like it's for couch potato people who just want to watch TV and get their prices right, like. Yes, it's poor marketing, but undoubtedly there will be awesome games and awesome things for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, they're not going to fail. Go ahead, Jamie.
I was just going to say, I think at least what I was thinking and what I think we were getting at is more of they're putting so much into this battle, and they don't seem to be winning right now. And even if they do win, what they'll gain by winning is like nebulous. So just thinking about them as a broader company, it's like, why? I think that was kind of the discussion we were having.
Frankly, I'm not even sure what Sony gains, because it's hard to make margins if you're on the cutting edge of the console industry. Like Nintendo has tons of money, even though they're doing really bad right now. But Sony, like, yeah, they had a profit last year, but only
they
because
had a
profit
they
sold off tons of their assets.
And they started selling life insurance. But I'm pumped for the Xbox One. I hope it does well. I love competition. Yeah. I think, you know, I can't wait to hold one of those controllers. And I will own one eventually, probably, at some point.
I probably won't, but I want it to be there. I want Microsoft to be there just to spur on.
Mm-hmm.
Without Microsoft, I don't think Sony would have taken this indie strategy. And that's what, you know.
Sure. I don't think Indy would even be a strategy if it wasn't for Microsoft.
Yeah, I agree. Because Japan doesn't really have an indie scene at all. I don't think Sony would have been forced to look to the West and integrate some of the shit that they finally seem to be integrating into their strategy.
Right, and I think it's easy to overlook what Microsoft has done in the past with the Xbox 360, with, you know, XBLA, and with, you know, the indie game scene on that, and with downloadable content, downloadable games, with multiplayer, with all the things that, that they were the industry leader for a while, and then Sony was playing the catch-up game, and now it seems like Sony is you know, putting all their money onto this, or putting all their chips on this indie kind of scene. Mm-hmm. But if you're saying, like, what is the Microsoft vision right now for the next console, I totally get you.
Yeah.
But, like, will it be a great gaming device? Undoubtedly, yes. But it has deviated so far from their original pitch that I can understand where you're saying, like, what are they doing?
Yeah. I was such a groupie, an Xbox groupie, in like 2008, 2009. Do you remember when like games like The Dishwasher came out and you'd never seen anything like that before?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like made by like one guy, but it was on the store and you were like, oh my God, this is awesome. They totally like spearheaded that whole movement.
I mean, look at Braid and like Super Meat Boy. I mean, those you know, those were on, you know, Xbox Live. I mean, those were like indie downloadable games that had a big market, you know, finally reached a sort of not mass appeal, but they had, you know, they had a big presence, and suddenly indie like blew up as an industry because of Microsoft.
Honestly, any company who put themselves in that position, it could have been Sony, would have felt the backlash of developers, because both Sony and Microsoft at that time were giant companies not used to dealing with like artistic people. So it's like, sure, like the indie devs are going to get mad because they can't have complete control over their games. And people give Microsoft a lot of flack because they treated JBLO bad, and they all this nonsense about having certain parameters that games have to have. But I'm sure Sony would have done the same stuff if they were there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Sony's just kind of reacting and being like, "Oh, of course we would never like take creative control out of the hands of their developer." But they're just kind of reacting to the failures of Microsoft.
Yeah. They're just looking to go where Microsoft didn't go. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, without Microsoft, I mean, you're not going to have – I mean, you know, Nintendo's not going to spur Sony to make progress. I mean, look, when they were – I mean, it was a different landscape when Nintendo and Sony were competing. But, you know, I mean, without some kind of competition, neither one is going to get better. So it's definitely – and, you know, for the longest time, I mean, even though I've never really been a huge fan of, you know, just what Microsoft has offered, they've done so much to change the landscape. I mean, to say – I didn't mean to imply that they weren't like important or valuable or useful or even, you know, at the top of everything for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. I think right now it's very easy to look at Microsoft and poo-poo them and be like, oh, what are those foolish fools doing? They're losing this console battle. But, you know, nothing like I've said time and time again, like pre-order sales mean nothing. What you're hearing, like the internet scuttlebutt, is meaningless. Like, it's all going to shake out in a year when the consoles have that time to, you know, take root and get in place. And, you know, as quickly we are to write it off as people who are ingrained in gaming culture, the average player is going to want to keep their shit where their shit has been. You know, it's like, my friends are here. I don't know what they're going to buy, so I may as well stick with what I know and have already, because I don't want to shake that up.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could go either way. I think it's they are also just an easy target because there's so much weird shit going on over at that company right now. Just not even only in the games division. I mean, you know, changing leadership, this huge acquisition that they just announced, you know, Windows 8 kind of doing okay, but not great. You know, just a lot of weird stuff going on. So people look at them and kind of see them. I guess it's easy to be like, oh my God, Microsoft is doomed, when obviously they're a colossal company and there's so much shit going on there that's a ridiculous thing to say, and people's fortunes change, you know, by the day. But, you know, it's I guess it's just going to be interesting to see how things shake out for them, and what maybe let's see what maybe what they do to turn their fortunes around and maybe become the number one seller. We'll see.
It's interesting to me just how big this launch is for both consoles, because there's I don't know, but I would venture a guess that there has never previously been a console launch with a million pre-orders. You know, I'm reading an article right now that says there's 700,000 people who are on the Xbox One watch list for GameStop alone. Like, that's crazy. Like, I know Griffin doesn't
that sounds like
to...
a horrible. No, it's just the Xbox watch list. We know what you keep showing your dick to Milo. We know what you're doing.
I was thinking more like, you know, like you get like a text alert on your cell phone, like breaking news. There's been an Xbox One sighting on Route 22.
I get those. I told
a man
you
in a Ford
alerts,
Bronco
right?
is leaving on the interstate with an Xbox One.
Silver alert.
I've heard the silver alerts announced on the radio, but tell me about them, Jamie.
No, they just they have big signs on like New Jersey highways, and it says silver alert, and then a license plate number. Yeah. I don't know what you're supposed to do if you see that car, but I guess call the police. I don't know.
Crash
but I was in the mall today, and they had a giant television in the mall, like huge. And then on the television, the only thing it was saying is Xbox One has sold out in many locations. That's all it was saying. It wasn't an advertisement thing. It was like a show, but like, I don't know.
Better
so yeah.
use of Microsoft ad dollars than that dancing Surface ad.
Do you guys feel like this is going to be a big launch for both consoles? I feel like there's a lot of buzz.
Yes, of course. But I also think that like this is the most meaningless discussion we will ever have, because it will completely be wiped away. And it's the same thing as like, you know, a month ago when people were like, I predict that the PlayStation 4 will be announced to come out in October 32nd because it makes the most sense strategically and Microsoft cannot keep up with that and their GPU. And it's just like Nostradamus conjecture of I project that this is going to happen because it makes the most sense to me. It is 100% meaningless.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying I'm excited that there's so much interest in it.
No, you're not. That's... You're wrong.
Yeah, I'm surprised by the level of interest, and I guess we'll have to see whether or not it's sustained after the launches or after it's just like kind of fizzles. And
yeah, it's like I've said so many times before.
Yeah,
this has not happened in a long time. Thus, it is so much bigger.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. 7 years. So, hey, my number nine.
Oh, did you guys get to that? What did I miss? You talk about Xbox announcement, its launch day, or did you hit that?
I don't really remember how we got there.
Okay. Well, just to cover that base right now, Xbox One is coming out November 22nd.
Yes. And it supports 8 controllers, which is 4 more than the PS4.
Double.
Yeah. Wait, what? Say what you just said again?
It supports 8 controllers, which is 4 more than the PS4. So, yeah, double the thing.
Yep.
The Xbox One is double the PS4.
PS4 can record videos from controllers that are 4 gigabytes in size. I don't know what I'm saying.
What are you talking about?
Tell me more. Tell me more.
I was trying to make a joke about how...
Use your bedroom voice.
And just go on. Move on.
No, I want to hear it in your bedroom voice.
PS4 can record video.
There's also a spec bump for the X-Bone, which we don't really care about.
Right. 10% increase in CPU capacity. Does that make a difference? No, not
Maybe.
To people like me.
Games.
Who knows? Possibly.
Right.
So, yeah. So those are things. My number nine. Hey, real quick. It's Mega Man.
Yep.
It's Mega Man. It's another Mega Man. The concept art looks friggin' baller. But
yeah, totally.
I don't know that I'm going to support it, because why?
Exactly.
Why should I support it?
Yep.
It's going to get 2.5 million, no problem.
Exactly.
I should just buy it when it comes out.
That's right. Do you want to pre-order your game or not is your question.
Do I want to pre-order my not even made yet game
right.
that might not be made
right.
or that might be made poorly? So, yeah. I'm not going to support it, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too.
Transformer Mega Man.
I'm going to support it.
You're going to support it?
I'm going to support it.
We should do like a chronicle of like your experience of supporting and our experience of not supporting and not experiencing any anxiety.
I don't experience anxiety. You guys just don't get it. You just don't get it at all. You guys should watch the latest video that they put out for the
Double Fine
game, because it's hilarious how they just they've never experienced backlash, and so now and so this new episode is basically them like for the first time being like feeling bad.
That's so sad.
It's a good episode.
I don't really care about the Double Fine, to be honest. I backed it, but I'm not particularly invested in it. I'm actually thinking of other stuff that I backed, which I think I mentioned in a previous episode, which has caused me anxiety.
Mm.
And I don't want that anymore. So
how can something that doesn't exist cause you anxiety?
I don't know, because it's just money that I spent that I want to get a return on.
I'm going to be $300,000 in debt. I don't
There's
care.
There's no rational reason for it, but you know, I don't want to have to worry about something.
I agree, Jeff. I think that I don't know why you put money into this project because it is a guaranteed success already. And hey, if you want more Mega Man, there is plenty out there already.
Mm.
It's not like there was like three Mega Man made and the subculture is screaming for another one and it is falling upon deaf ears. It is like Mega Man is a thing. Everybody's aware it's a thing. And yeah, they want another one, but you know, just go play 9 or 10 if that's what you really want.
Well, I think people are clamoring for what he is offering.
Sure.
I guess if I were enough of a Mega fan, and maybe if certain other parameters were met, I would probably throw in money. But in this particular instance, I like Mega Man a lot. I really enjoy it, but I don't have enough like fire in my soul
right.
to let my money go like that.
I think what people are paying for that you guys in your cold, calculating, dead hearts can't understand is they're paying for the opportunity to become a mega fan. Do you understand? That's what they're buying. They're buying a promise of joy that may be dashed, but that's what you get with Kickstarter. You get to become a bigger fan of something than you were previously.
I think of it similarly, Jamie, but I would like to approach it by saying, if you want to rationalize this to yourself and kickstart this project, I think it's great that people are throwing money at Keiji Inafune to make more games, because that dude has done great work in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to look at this Kickstarter as like, this dude wants to make a game that he probably can't make normally, okay, go support that. But if it's like you're a Mega Man fan, there's enough Mega out there already to satiate your appetite.
I do totally get the like being a Mega. I use the word Mega, but I mean like super fan. I get the like being a super fan angle. But I would, if I were to support this, I would only support it at the pre-order tier. And to me, that doesn't make me feel like more of a fan than I was, because it's just like, oh, I'm just buying the game.
Right. Exactly.
Whereas if I were ready to throw in like $100, then it would be a different story, because it would be like, oh, you know, my name is in the credits or something, or I don't know. I get to
also feels like
take
is your $100 really gonna move? is this $100 really gonna move that to success? Like,
yeah, that's the other thing. It's so big. I kind of worry about big Kickstarters, just because big budget is hard to manage.
The one that I really hate is the camouflage, Republic. Every time I get an update, what they do is I think they take the Double Fine updates and then they condense them and then they just send that out again. So like if Double Fine sends out an update that says like, we made too big of a game, 2 months later you'll get one from Camouflage and it's like one sentence. And it's like, we made too big of a game. Nothing else.
One that I'm backing right now, which is, I think I already talked about it. It's like a retro handheld thing. The guy, he sends out updates and they're like defensive. They're like, listen, everyone, I know it's like been 6 months since I promised to deliver these things, but I'm just one man.
What's the game?
I'm sorry. What's it called?
Yeah.
It's called the GCW Zero.
Oh.
It's an actual piece of hardware.
But
the guy is like, he's like has an attitude in his official Kickstarter updates. And that's why I get anxious about them, because I read them and I'm like, this guy's crazy. Like, I will probably get the item in question because some people have already. But the whole thing was just, I didn't really like it. So I don't know if I want to do that again unless I feel really good about the product, or I'm really, really invested in the product. You know, I meet the creators. Like, I met the creators of Shovel Knight and I played the demo. And I was like, yeah, I want this on my Wii U. So I kickstarted that. Plus, it looked like it might not make it.
Sure.
Yeah. This made it in a day.
Yeah. Shovel Knight was something that if you kickstart too, you put money towards, then hopefully that's something that you can disseminate around your like friend groups and say, hey, check this out. Like, I put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
Mm.
But when you give $15 to Penny Arcade just for the hell of it, like this guy.
You wait for what?
Penny Arcade had a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
To go ad free.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have a goal.
Wait, are they already ad free? I'm confused.
Their goal is like $1, very controversial, $1 goal or something, very minuscule amount. And it was like, it was basically a list of stretch goals. Like, it was like, if you donate this much, we're going to take off these ads. If you donate this much, we're going to take off these ads. If you donate this much, we're going to take off these ads. And, you know, it got a lot of shit on the internet because they weren't actually saying we're going to provide you with something different. It was like, we're going to keep doing the same thing we've always done before, but this time it'll have less ads around it.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw in on that. Solely for the purpose of saying, hey, I've been reading you for 10 years. I'm okay with giving you $15 for the purpose of giving you money solely.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they're in the news because, well, the game's news because of their...
Yeah, I don't know.
They reopened the Dick Wolves thing because they're idiots.
That is Kotaku-ass Kotaku bullshit. I don't even want to talk about that.
They are,
I don't know what it is. I'll talk about it later.
Nope. Yeah. Don't talk about it.
Okay. I'll tell you after we're done, Jamie. We'll talk about it then.
It's
silly. I mean, they probably shouldn't have gone there, but it's also, the whole thing is just, it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing. It's
reactionary bullshit.
They're good. They give money to Child's Play a lot.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. No one's perfect. Exactly.
Yeah. Child's Play, like, actually, on a slightly serious note, like, I see that more and more in the hospital. Like, they're like our boxes in the peds wings and stuff, and they have like Child's Play on them, and they make like video game rolling stations. So like it'll be like a screen and a Wii, and like you can roll it into a room for a kid. And actually, there have been studies done. And it's like the kids who have those get better faster. It's freaking awesome.
Great.
Yeah. I love Child's Play.
Well, speaking of things that'll probably be on carts for kids, let's talk about Pokemon.
Jamie, did you watch the Pokemon video?
The Nintendo Now thing, whatever it's called? No.
All right, I'll fit you in. So it was 20 minutes long, and because Japan, there were two announcements in those 20 minutes.
It was at 4 a.m., wasn't it?
7 a.m. U.S. time.
Oh, okay.
Or Eastern time, rather. 6 a.m., I guess, your time, so it's still pretty early. So they announced a couple things.
Which would be 4 a.m. Pacific.
Yes. All the things they announced were things I pretty much didn't like. They announced Pokemon Box, which is a service that allows you to store up to 3,000 Pokemon in the cloud.
What?
Yeah. So, like, you can store them online and then download them at will.
Oh, my God.
But it is an annual fee service. So it's like a storage extension, but they're like, listen, in order to store your Pokemon, we need space on servers. So give us money.
I'm so tired, and this is making me really angry.
Hey, just think about it at this point. Bill's mansion is going to be so fucking crammed full of servers right now.
I can
store all that garbage.
I can't imagine that each Pokemon is more than like 100 bytes. I don't know. Maybe it's like, let's say it's a megabyte each. It's probably too much. It can't be a megabyte each. It's just a few bytes. It's like, why do you need to pay money every year for this tiny-ass service?
Ugh.
And then they also pissed me off because I was hoping they wouldn't let you transfer in your old Pokemon, because for me, they kind of ruin it, because I explained this to Griffin. I don't think you were in on the podcast. Basically, you can, because they like have to be compatible with the old games, there were like moves you could learn in the old games, which you can't learn in the new games. Like they've taken them off the Pokemon's learn set, but okay. You can transfer in the old Pokemon that know those moves. So they kind of like certain moves like that
it
are really
to a surf.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the layperson's example. That one doesn't really matter. But
did he just burn you, Griffin?
Griffin, my Pokecred has been shattered. Pokemon.
No, Griffin knows what's up. Anyway, so he's just giving you a more understandable.
I just got mud slapped.
Very nice. Oh man. Anyway,
showstopper.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's okay. So you can like transfer in these Pokemon that know all these powerful moves that are kind of a little bit not broken, but they kind of unbalance the game a little. And I was hoping they just kind of cut it off and not let you bring in any old shit, but they announced something that lets you transfer in your old stuff, which I was disappointed about. And it also is part of the service that costs money. So that's just like another slap in the face. But then they announced you get first generation starters in X and Y along with your new starters, and they have mega versions of each one.
Wait. If you have the service?
No. You just get this. Those are part three
of the news.
Yeah. So you can get a Charmander, Bulbasaur, or a Squirtle, and they can turn into Mega Charizard, Mega Blastoise, and Mega Venusaur. Which
what?
Is
right.
What?
So then
cool.
When you transfer in all your old garbage Pokemons, then all of them can be Mega as well.
Yeah, they pretty much implied that almost every Pokemon is going to get it. I mean, it's not 100%, but they used some of the language they were using made it sound like a lot of Pokemon are going to get Mega Evolution.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Awesome.
That's cool, I guess.
I guess.
I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I don't really like how even the strong guys are getting a lot stronger, because I fuck those strong guys. They're stupid.
Sure.
It's going to be the same as it always is. We're going to love it, whatever.
Yeah.
With Pokemon Box, though, Jeff, I was going to say, since it's a monetized thing of like, you pay this amount for this yearly fee to have this crap, like, that's really only talking to a very small subset of Pokemon enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you see this going a direction of like Call of Duty Elite or Halo Waypoint, like where it is this paid service that eventually will give you more things in time?
Maybe. I mean, I think it will eventually probably give you more shit, and they did imply that it will carry on to new games. I don't think it'll ever be as, I guess, exploitative as those services you just enumerated are. It's only 500 yen a year in Japan, which is really not that bad. My major objection to it, honestly, is just that I fucking wish they would get rid of all the stupid old Pokemon, and I was just really disappointed to hear that you can bring in your old shit from Black and White.
Is this like you want to like purge your childhood? Like, is this like a psychological thing that's going on? Like,
it's literally because I have watched people who play Pokemon competitively, and I want it to be different. I don't actually do it myself. I've done it a little bit once. But I just want the metagame to be more accessible.
Yeah, you want to reset the ladder. I get it.
Exactly. I want to be able to participate. And if they do this shit, I'm not going to be able to participate. And it's just going to get way more complicated than it needs to be.
Mm.
And that disappoints me. And also,
you need your holofoil Ponyta.
Exactly.
To compete.
Have you? That's interesting because there is a video on YouTube.
I've seen that video.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you.
I mean, Jeff, do you see? It's basically what I was getting to. It's do you see this service coming to the United States and having any success as it is offered right now?
I think people will buy it.
You do?
I do.
I mean, to me, I see that this cannot succeed unless they bundle something with it where it's like, okay, you get this Pokebox, but then, you know, once every month you get this mystery egg that turns into some shit or something. Like you get yeah. this rare Pokemon, or you get this rare thing that comes with it. Like, just as is, this service does not sound like something that will ever find a hold here.
Well, what about mommy syndrome? What about your mom walks into GameStop to buy it for you? Hey, do you want the guide? Yeah. Hey, do you want the Pokebox $5 thing for a year? You can put all your Pokeball, your kids are going to love it. Okay.
No, because I think that's way too confusing. Like, you hand a lady a book and it's like, okay, my kid can read this and learn to catch them all. But you're like selling this online service with a subscription fee, and that person that's immediately like, oh, well, I mean, I don't know if he's going to like the Pokemons in another 6 months. Like,
oh, interesting. That's a good point.
I think you underestimate how much people are obsessed with transferring all their old Pokemon from the old games. People do that shit. I don't understand why, but they do it. And that's going to get people to buy. That's going to get a subset of people to buy it out of the gate, probably old Pokemon fans.
Sure, yeah.
And then I do think you're right, Griffin. I think that it would really help for them to just distribute Pokemon. But I think if they do that mystery egg strategy, it'll cost them absolutely nothing, and it is a great way to get people to keep paying.
Yeah, I think they need to put it with something. Because okay, the other question I had, Jeff, was right now, where are your Pokemon?
I don't really. I stopped doing that.
It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your Pokemon are?
I transferred a lot of them in from. I transferred a couple shinies in from like Fire Red or Leaf Green or something into
too part of the problem.
Into Diamond and Pearl, but then I stopped.
Okay, but maybe not specifically you. Like, where are the Pokemon White and Black Pokemons living right now?
In Pokemon Black and White,
so they're in those carts.
Are you asking me like an existential question here? I don't understand.
Where, like, are the Pokemon, man?
They're in my heart, man.
No, like, how does this system work? Because, like, okay, do I have to keep my Pokemon Black and White cards and then I put them into my 3DS? And then I connect to this weird service and I beam the Pokemons that are on that cart? Or are they in this web cloud thing already?
They're on your cart right now.
Okay.
And then you put your card in your 3DS. You load up the app. The app presumably pretends to your cart that the game is turned on and you're in a trade. And then it takes away your Pokemon. It's going to be some kind of interface that allows you to erase data or copy data from the cartridge.
Each Pokemon will have an individual friend code that is 24 characters long.
So essentially what I'm getting at is, in order for this to be a thing that people use, you have to retain your old Pokemon cards. You have to go through this multi-step process of flopping in and out cards, and mm-hmm. your Pokemon are not in a cloud somewhere that are accessible. Like, If you traded your card in, you no longer have those Pokemon anymore.
Once you do this, you can get rid of your card, but only once you do this.
Okay. So again, I'm saying, who is this appealing to? Only the people that still have their Pokemon cards.
I agree, but this is the least onerous method they've come up with. They've done this several times now, and the old methods literally would only let you do 6 a day. And you had to do a shitty minigame every time.
Oh, my God.
People still did it in droves. So I think that it will get enough. I don't think it will get a huge number, but I think that it will get enough. Because Pokemon fans are crazy motherfuckers. At least the older ones.
Okay, Nintendo's batshit crazy. But they have, like, started doing stuff that is, like planning and interesting. And I think that I want to say that they wouldn't do this unless they thought there was a market there. Like before they, you know, every time I do the Nintendo Club thing for a 3DS game, it's always asked me, do you play this game in 3DS? And I always thought that was a weird-ass question to ask. And then they come out with the 2DS. And I'm like, okay, I guess you guys actually are thinking about shit. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that Jeff is a good barometer for Nintendo craziness. And if Jeff's going to get it, then it'll probably be okay.
Okay, then my final question, subtly criticizing this thing, is do you think that it will get released for $5 in the United States, or do you think it'll be more or less?
Probably $5 a year, which really isn't much of a revenue stream, but whatever.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it's 10. I don't know. I doubt it because the yen's weak right now, I think.
Maybe it's just like one of those things they'll put it up as like your benefit for joining the Nintendo Club and having 1,000 gold points.
You oh,
get
no.
Your shitty little...
No. You would get 500 more slots.
Guys, I just went to Club Nintendo and I have 2,010 coins that I haven't even spent.
You're a monster.
I'm 200 coins away from gold.
Jesus Christ. So I think I have like 600 or 700 or something like that.
I have 17 to-dos right now that I've just been sitting on.
Oof. Hey, so question about Pokemon, Jeff. They still haven't shown the evolutions, the full evolutions for the starters, right?
No, they haven't.
Okay.
I hope Damn. They will. I know. It's such a bummer.
I still don't know who to pick.
They inadvertently revealed like a split-second frame of a llama looking white and black. Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Llamas.
If you hit up Cerebi, that site that I directed you to before.
Yeah. I'm familiar with them.
You'll see a screen of it.
Yep.
It kind of looks... it looks cute. You check it out.
All right.
It's got some stuff.
All right.
Yeah, nothing... Really, this was kind of a disappointing... Like I would say 40% of Nintendo Directs, this was a disappointing experience. Yeah. But...
Do you want to talk about anything else Pokemon Direct related?
They have armbands, and it's like anime now, because you yell into your armband, and then your Pokemon's like, Mega Evolve!
Oh, that's cool. So it's like Kamen Rider.
Yep.
I thought they were like, they're like Fitbits.
Yeah, they're very Japanese, that's what they are.
Kids love those Fitbits.
I'm super worried that Mega Evolution business is just going to completely imbalance the game. But that's something that only applies to an incredibly small set of people.
Sure. I'm excited for it to imbalance the game and me just steamroll everything.
Yeah, I'm with Griffin.
I'm going to fuck up Team Flare, Neptune, Magon, whatever they are.
I'm like torn because I on the one hand, I like weird shit. But I also, I think that imbalance can be fun, like if it creates like a party atmosphere, but imbalance can be really shitty if it just makes it so everyone does one thing. And I'm afraid
have the previous Pokemon games been balanced?
No, never.
I would not say that they were balanced exactly, but they were workable in that people made rule sets online which weren't that complicated and allowed you to play the game competitively.
So okay. That'll happen for this one.
Yeah, of course.
I think my fear is that all the new shit they're adding will make stuff so complicated because the stuff that they've shown sounds super broken. And I'm a little, just certain things worry me, like weird little things that probably wouldn't really resonate with you guys. But like they said that like when you do Pokemon Ami, you can increase critical chances for your dudes. And that to me is like, no, I don't want that at all. Like that sounds terrible.
Well, if you don't want to play with the Black Lotus card, then you join a league where they outlaw the Black Lotus card.
Yeah,
I feel like you're gonna find your if you want it, make your own rules, and I'm sure people will be with you. I don't know.
I just don't want the game to be. I want it to find that balance that it has had in the past.
But Jeff, hasn't the whole like world of the Pokemon like. Competitive scene becomes so crazy bananas anyway that no matter what they do, it's going to be ridiculous. Like there are already people who devote their lives to like fake Pokemon training with effort values and tweaking things both in game and through like tool assisted stuff out of game. Like, isn't it already so broken and busted that it doesn't matter?
Maybe. I mean, I guess it's been standardized to the point where you don't see a lot of the broken and bustedness because everyone just hacks the maximum of all those values. Or like, I don't know, they just, it's balanced out to where there is an interesting metagame which is able to exist without the viewer or the consumer being too bogged down and also the creator being too bogged down by the complication. And I'm worried about, I don't know, it's hard to describe exactly the concern I have. And
I can understand
worn out.
Is this like the internet equivalent of like, I hate everything on the internet because now everybody understands everything? Like, are you upset because now they're going to surface effort values and you're going to
know what it was really like.
I had to put that muscle band on for hours, days, years on end to get my Machoke this way. And now you just pet your dude and he's happy.
No. That's a good thing. I'm happy about that. I want all that stuff to be very visible and accessible. What I'm afraid of, have you guys played Dual Strike Advance Wars?
No.
Okay.
I'm afraid of Advance Wars Dual Strike happening to Pokemon where everything is so unbelievably broken that it's kind of not fun. That's all.
What I was going to say is I can understand your disappointment if you were like holding this up as Pokemon's opportunity to become not broken, and now you're learning that it's just totally broken. I can understand you being disappointed, but I would be surprised that you would have thought that would happen, given that even I, who am not in this universe at all, know that it's totally broken.
I mean, it's got some issues, but I mean, there was just a world championship that people watched. I mean, I didn't personally watch it, but people, you know, went to participate in it and brought strategies and stuff. So it's not so broken right now that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Mega Blastoise.
Mega Blastoise.
A lot of water. Cool. A lot of water coming out of him.
I mean, if you really want, I could spend like, you know, 20 minutes explaining, like, I'm worried about Mega Charizard because of his auto Sunny Day move, and those moves tend to be broken. I don't know. It's just complicated.
Sunny Day?
Yeah.
I love.
Just not even gonna bother.
I want you to write me like a primer.
I should. I should really write you guys both like a document that explains.
No, it's fine. This totally reminds me of when I was playing Metal Gear Solid 4 recently, and I was trying to show it to anybody ever, and you're like, this is an FFV cutscene of somebody making eggs and singing pie. That's David Hayter wearing an eyepiece explaining his role in this fake movie that is a parallel to this game. Oh my god.
That's the best part of that game, probably. And they're like, why don't you take the eye patch off? And he's like, no, I don't want to. Love that part.
So yes, it will make sense to no one because we're just crazy.
Yep. It's really, I kind of want to try, but there's really no point.
It'll be fun. You'll have fun.
Oh,
you'll like it.
I know. I'm sure I will. I just hope that it has the same staying power that the others do in terms of having fun with matches.
No one is more acutely aware than Nintendo of the awfulness that they will bring upon themselves if they substantially change this game to any large degree. I feel like whatever they're throwing in there can't be that.
That's true.
Crazily
that's a
different.
Very good point. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's all for me and Pokemon. It'll be interesting.
When is it out? October?
October 12th.
Okay. Soon. Wow.
National 2DS Day.
On that note, I think we should recall this podcast to its Pokeball because I don't think there's too much more to talk about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Jamie, thanks for showing up. Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime. Thank you. This has been Boss Bro Radio, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Yes.
Bye.